Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City. This is Film Grok. Our movie for this week is Kill Bill Volume 2, continuing on our work from last week. Today we have our esteemed panel,
Duncan K. Fraser.
And
Taylor Thomas.
And
Heidi Hilliker. And I did not eat my mic this time.
Good work.
And moi, Serge Dalpierre. Our cue point for Kill Bill Volume 2 is actually the same one as Kill Bill Volume 1. It's at the end of the very first Miramax logo. As soon as that Miramax Films thing goes to black, the music will start it underneath it. Just pause it there. And then when we're ready to go down, well, we'll count down 3, 2, 1, play. And then you can hit play, and then you can hear us in sync with you. Or you can just listen to this on your own whenever you're doing something, or when you're seeking out revenge on someone, or something like that.
That'd be nice.
Doing some Tai Chi, you know, in the backyard.
Right. Ooh, that's good.
Sharpening blades.
With your Tai Chi sword.
Or cutting large bamboo poles with a katana.
That's right. And the Tai Chi sword you use with what hand?
I guess your sword hand, which to me would be my right hand.
Whichever hand has not had a digit chopped off of the pinky, right, Heidi?
Yeah.
Although
you use your other hand for balance. So it would
you'd be out of balance.
I'd be out of balance.
Abadada.
Whoa. As demonstrated.
Whoa.
That's what it sounds like, folks.
Nice. We had a fortune cookie fortune last week, if you all remember so clearly. So we're going to say it again since we still have the same fortune sitting in front of us. Mm-hmm. And that fortune is your present plans are going to succeed.
Oh, snap. Mm-hmm. I bet you that when Beatrix Kiddo woke up in the hospital, she opened up a fortune cookie that had that same fortune.
No doubt.
Your present plans are going to succeed, and she knew that she would make it. Absolutely. So you're not going to smack. You're not going to bang the table again, are you?
No, that was just the technique for opening the cookie last time.
Ah, okay. No.
I almost had a stroke last time.
Okay.
Wow. It like coagulated your blood.
It did.
In
I
your
was
brain.
Like, oh, God.
Yes.
My chi is very powerful.
It is. Well,
say that for Star Wars. That's pretty good. Actually, for this one, actually, the chi could apply. So, let's talk about seeing Kill Bill Volume 2. Kill Bill Volume 2, of course, came out 1 year after Kill Bill Volume 1. And I remember going to see it. Actually, that's the one thing I do remember. I don't remember seeing Volume 1 distinctly, but I remember Volume 2. So, because I had expectations for it.
Yeah. So. I really remember seeing Volume 2.
Me too.
Again, because I'd seen Volume 1, and it blew my brains out.
Right.
So, I spent the whole next year just anticipating this movie. I would have to say Kill Bill Volume 2 is the most anticipated movie for me in my entire life.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay. I can see it. Totally
because
see that, yeah.
I had been waiting to see it since the second in the movie theater that Volume 1 ended.
See, for me...
Same here.
For me, that film would have been, and I know you and I have discussed this, Duncan, that film would have been Return of the Jedi. That was the most anticipated film, and that's unfortunately why I was so disappointed, because it was so anticipated.
Yeah.
So it's great that you had that experience and it did live up to that anticipation.
Yeah, but you know what? It actually was hard. It took me... I needed, like, a day to sit with this film after I saw it in the movie theater, because when you're waiting so long for something and your expectations are so high and you don't know what to expect because what you're basing your expectations off of is something else you couldn't have really prepared for.
Oh, yeah.
You don't really know how to take it all. And I wasn't quite sure actually when the film finished how much I liked it. I was like, I just need to like sit and think about all of this for about a day. And then the next day I was like, wow, that was great. It was everything and it answered everything and it did everything. And I just needed a second for it to leave its own impression on me, not the same, you know, to be in the same impression that I had from the first film.
But it's interesting that it took you about a day to process that.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. How about you, Taylor?
Did
it take that long to process it too?
No. See, Kill Bill Volume 1 was the first Tarantino film I'd seen.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time Volume 2 came out, I'd seen all his movies. And I was so excited to see it. And I remember watching it just going, this is a completely different type of movie from the first one. And I really appreciated that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I loved that. Mm-hmm. It just, I thought that was so unexpected and brave in a way. And I just really appreciated it.
Mm.
And I enjoyed it thoroughly. I didn't need a day.
is that a tear coming out of your eye?
Yeah.
I think my reaction was, I think Kill Bill's made such an impression on me in its own way. When I saw Kill Bill Volume 2, it was just such a different in a way, such a different film. I was like, they shot all this at the same time. Maybe they were supposed to just break it up, and maybe that was just very, very wise to do. And parts I don't like, but it felt, I don't want to say it felt wholer. It felt different. It felt different. I did enjoy it, and, you know, the end, it's just a different kind of film. So
the tone
to
is
watch
so
it again.
Different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, of course, they compared it at the time, and the first film is more of a samurai film. The second film is more of a Western type of thing. So.
Well, I mean, I guess, and, you know, stylistically, that's obvious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But she's at a different part of her journey.
Exactly.
You know, the first film is just all the her realizing what had happened to her and that initial instinct to push back, you know, and now you're getting into the second film where she's already, the instinct is kind of wearing off a little bit. Her judgment is starting to get a little less clouded and everything becomes a little more clear and it's starting to get a little more wrapped up and tightened up. And I think it's more of, I think the first movie is purely reactional, which is why it's so fun and thrilling and exciting and why I think anybody can watch it and just, you know, be completely stimulated by it.
Lots of adrenaline.
Right, a lot of adrenaline. But I think the second film is now what you do. Now that you've had that initial reaction, now what do you do? You know, you got to complete the plan.
Yeah, coming down from the high.
Yeah, it's coming down from the high, yeah.
And that's interesting because the first film actually flips the two revenge killings because we see the second one first and then we see the first one, which was so much more of a big challenge, but emotionally it's in the right place in terms of the movie and in terms of her internal journey. So it's kind of interesting. What about you? Duncan.
Well,
I
saw it in the theater, like all of us. And I'd had warning ahead of time that it was going to be a completely different kind of film. And I'd read some stuff about it beforehand. So I wasn't taken aback by it being different. In fact, I really appreciate it. I don't know what I would classify it as, but I don't know if Western would have come into my mind. It's definitely more of a... Maybe intrigue is a strong word, but it's more of it's almost like she has to be like the killer samurai in the first film, and she has to be the sneaky ninja in the second film.
Hmm.
You know, she's actually starting to be more crafty and have to do like sleuthing to find out where Bill is and where Bud is, and you know, figure all that out. And yeah, she has like a fist fight, basically a hand to hand, you know, all out brawl with. Daryl Hannah, you know, in the trailer, but that was sort of an accident. Like, she came back to get Bud.
Right.
And Daryl Hannah happened to be there, you know? And that was kind of what we talked about in the first one. It was like her mistake. It was Daryl Hannah's mistake for, you know, kind of not having that same sense of honor kind of thing. Because if she had just come and, you know, done her business and left, she wouldn't have been there for that.
Right.
But yeah, I really appreciate it. I really liked the thing, and a lot of my friends didn't. I had to argue with a lot of people.
A lot of people when it first came out weren't really big fans of it in comparison to the first one, which I just thought was insane. You know?
I think maybe those people didn't know it was supposed to be a different kind of film and were shocked by that, taken aback by that, and it just sort of stuck with
them. And I think a lot of it's just expectation. I think that, you know, I think that kills the best, not even just film, but the best stories, any kind of, and you know, interpretive art form, whatever that may be, I think a lot of times anticipation kills it. I think people just turn it into something. You can't, your mind can make a mountain out of a molehill, you know?
Yeah.
And then you get there and you realize, oh, it's just a little patch of dirt, you know? It's like, it's nothing. And it's just, I think that happens a lot, unfortunately.
But the flip side was true, too. I know a lot of people that didn't like Kill Bill Volume 1.
Right.
And then they saw Volume 2 and loved it.
Right.
So I thought that was kind of interesting, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Most of the arguments I hear against Volume 1 is just the blood. Like, some people just can't handle that,
Then I hate to say, then that's not the movie for you.
Well, right. You know, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, to discount a movie based on something like that when it's so... creative and so interesting.
But some people can't deal with blood, unfortunately. Yeah.
They can't see the story past it.
They can't, whatever their sensitivities
are.
Too
bad.
Let's get the movie started. We'll keep on talking about this. So. All right, so Gus is back in the Film Grok projection booth today. Hey, Gus.
Does he have both arms?
Yes, Gus has both.
Reference from last week.
I know. We said that Gus lost an arm, but I don't think so. I think that was Bubba Meissel.
I was referencing the symbiotic relationship between Gus.
That was Sophie. Yeah.
Sophie. Sophie will be our projectionist next week. That's right. Okay. All right. Enough talk.
I'll let you keep your wicked life for two reasons.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay. Oh, boy. Okay.
One.
Here's a truth.
Okay. Film grot commentary.
That's looking ahead.
Okay, now we're really going to start. 3, 2, 1, play. Play. Is it playing? There we go.
It's playing now.
Yeah, delayed, played.
I would add 2 seconds
Films
to that play.
Miramax Films presents. It just went away. Presents, that's right. And now we get a band apart.
So if you're
now
there,
it fades out. And now we have... I'm just trying to give cue points. Uma Thurman came up. Okay, so now you have enough little cue points.
Interestingly, that font right there is like a total...
It's a different font.
It's a totally different font.
Yep. Black and white.
Very Art Deco.
Art Deco. Yeah.
And we start in the same place.
The beginning.
Because this is always the beginning.
But he's already wiped out. Yeah, exactly. It's the end there. Now, of course, we have very dramatic music, different than the first one.
But right away, he's saying this is a different movie.
Well, of course. Yeah. Then he has her basically talking to us.
I love this, though.
I love it.
This gets very meta. See, this is what I didn't know how much.
But see, to me, this is very old Hollywood. This is like the beginning of, you know, Maltese Falcon or something, you know. She's going down the twisty, rear projected, you know, roads of Southern California.
I don't mind that, but it's what she says. And when she says, you know, what critics, when I went on my rampage with critics called bloody or this or that, I mean, that's getting very meta. Which I think is cool, but I kind of don't like it, just because it lets you know it's a movie. I don't mind knowing it's a movie, but being told it's a movie, I think, alienates you in a way in your consciousness. I don't mind. It's kind of a weird thing I have.
But I guess in a way, too, though, but feeling a little removed and having them say, we are a little removed, is, I mean, I think it goes along with the whole epic feeling of the films that they are, you know, that this is like a mighty character and this is, you know, a legendary journey.
Okay, absolutely. I totally told him about that. Massacre at Two Pines.
Yeah, and epic and mighty in a very old school kind of sense, like you're watching something about politics or like one of those old silent sci-fi films.
Yeah, but it's almost... It makes a point about culture. It has a timeless epic feeling to it, too, because it crosses so many genres of what you would consider a hero and what you would consider a hero's journey.
And starting in black and white sort of like makes you feel like it's almost more authoritative because it feels like it's from somewhere earlier.
Right, it has a past.
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay, all right. That's interesting.
I love this.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Because you finally see who's there. I mean, we've only ever seen these people dead.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's right. Oh, that the guy actually, that's Bo Svenson. And the woman on the left is another actress from the 70s who I forget. I like the friends. I always like the peripheral characters, the friends. Mm-hmm. And you know who that is? Sam Jackson at the piano.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course.
I love me tender.
Yeah.
With the cigarette.
Yeah.
I do like how they try to pass this chapel off as just some like run-of-the-mill chapel when in all actuality it looks really nice. Even in black and white. Nice. Like that wood, you can tell that the wood is all new, really nice wood. You know, this isn't just some like old crappy place.
Oh, it's a very nice chapel.
It's a really, really nice chapel.
Very nice southwestern chapel.
Uh-huh.
So this is interesting. Do you think that, or does anyone know whether they did all of this in the black and white on purpose, or was it because they had to do the other part in black and white in the volume one and thought, oh, we can use that as a device in the second movie?
I think that they were going to, I mean, this is just my own opinion. I don't know this for fact.
Yes.
But I'm going to say that this was intended to be black and white because in the very beginning of volume one, when they're showing the wedding stuff, it's in black and white.
I'm with you.
I think so, too.
Yes. I concur.
Was that initial scene supposed to be in black and white from the very get-go? Are we
I would think so.
Yeah.
Because I kind of wonder, like...
I think it was supposed to, and I think that's what gave them the idea to go to black and white for the second part of the fight.
Oh, that would make sense.
Yeah.
That would
yeah.
make sense. Like, why, like how to get rid of the blood but not get rid of the blood kind of thing.
Yeah, because Tarantino didn't want to back down from the
I
blood.
Love her friends.
Right.
The groom, I recognize the groom from somewhere. He's done... something
yeah
recently.
He does look very familiar
yeah.
but he looks like he should be like a country singer or like someone that doesn't usually do acting, like he does something else.
Huh.
I don't know,
for some reason this reminds me of the friends in Pulp Fiction when she ODs and she's brought over to Eric
yeah, kind of.
Oh, what's his name again? Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
And this is great, too. Like, you don't really think of Bill as a samurai, but the fact that he has musical talent and carries this, like, crazy weird flute places and plays it.
Well, that's a very... that was total kung fu reference.
Juxtapositions yeah. with the thing. Yeah, but it kind of works. Like, if you'd never
totally
seen
works.
Kung fu... And I honestly
Absolutely.
Haven't seen that many. I've seen maybe two episodes of the original Kung Fu.
Oh, wow.
And, like, three or four of the new Kung Fu series where he plays the grandson or great-grandson of the original Kwai
right.
Cheng Kane. But it's a... it's kind of known... that samurai weren't just
that's
supposed
a
to be warriors.
Shot.
They were supposed
it's
to have
gorgeous.
Other... They're supposed to have other skills, and I just love yeah. that about that they made Bill like that, who's a villain.
I really think to get, I mean, I don't know, but I think to get this kind of shot, and you have to shoot in black and white just to get all the texture and everything. Mm. So
yeah.
I really
we're finally
going to
see
was,
Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and we just did. Yeah. There we go. And he's doing his flute.
He's just a man.
Mm-hmm.
Can't be that hard to kill just a man.
Hmm.
Hmm. She's really pregnant.
Mm-hmm. She is holding the front of her dress up, though.
Which we never saw in the first film, how pregnant she was.
Mm. Only in the animation.
Yeah,
oh,
the
did
animation.
We see the animation?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
I didn't notice, yeah.
And when she's laying on the floor, you see it.
Yeah, you can tell.
When she's laying on the floor, we just see basically head and shoulders.
No, you don't. And when they come in to inspect her.
Oh, yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. Okay. You're right. Okay.
And so you can tell here, I mean, in scenes like this, mm-hmm. you can, again, like what you were just mentioning, you can tell that it was set up to be shot on black and white film.
Yeah,
because the tonality of it, you know, the use of blacks to whites and the grayscale,
yeah.
the lighting, is all prescripted for black and white film.
Right.
Whereas they just had good luck when they had to change that other one to mm-hmm. black and
well,
white.
But if you notice, what they did is they also, I don't know what it's called, but basically they put a bit of a, I don't want to call it fog filter on the fight. So basically, made everything glow a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you can time color down to be black and white, but it just will never look as good as when you actually shoot on black and white.
Right, like
and
right here. Like, the blacks are so much
totally.
Blacker. Like, his shoes and his pants look so, like, saturated of blackness.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's
sharp.
Beautiful. Well, mm-hmm. it is. You've got the grain. You've got the grain. You have the black and white grain, loosely called the black and white grain as opposed to color grain.
Right.
Because in black and white, basically, all it is it's black and then the grades of black, whereas with color, you've got the three colors and how they mix and their gradations.
Right now, the side of Bill's face reminds me of, like, an old, like, one of those stone outcroppings in the middle of New Mexico or Arizona or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it looks like where you might find, like, you know, Indian hieroglyphics or something.
Hmm.
I don't know. The texture of it and everything.
Well, I think the black and
Which
white definitely
been,
helps to
yeah.
emphasize that.
Yeah,
yeah.
It might
I
have been
the...
like on purpose. He just looks like he's like old as the hills, basically, but sort of immovable at the same time.
Well, and I love the contrast between her skin and his skin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The scene is so great because you don't ever get... There's a reason why... she has so much vengeance inside of her and wants revenge so bad because she was truly wronged. And it's not just about some people who left her to die. Right. It's about this relationship right here that they give us right away in the beginning of the second film, which is so necessary that they start building on this from right now through the end of the movie, because this is why she does everything. Right. It's because she loves this man.
And this right here is what makes the very last scenes matter and why you're so drawn in watching it happen.
Right.
Because they are kind of protracted a little bit, but it's stuff you want to hear by then.
Yep. And this is where it gets to be a little bit more of, in its own way, of a real human story. Yeah. You know, where the first movie's just all reactionary. It's all adrenaline. It's all like,
very action.
Right.
Movie.
It's the reaction. It's instinct. Whereas this is more human. This is relationships between people, and this is cause and effect. And you just finally get to go into all of that a little bit more.
Well, it's more character driven in a way.
Yeah.
Arlene.
I love the smile he gets on his face right there too.
His reaction's great.
Yep.
That's actually really interesting. The names, Bill, just to remind us. Mm-hmm.
I love how you can genuinely right now. I think she thinks everything's going to be okay, and it's really kind of sad.
Yeah, because you know what's coming,
right? But I think somewhere in the back of her mind, I don't know. I kind of think in the back of her mind, she's thinking there's gnawing little thing that maybe she can get herself out of this. Just maybe, maybe. But that's a great thing. This is the great thing about this. You don't really know, and you can read into it what she's thinking. That's what makes this such a good film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And because you get, also in this film, I like a lot too, is that you get to see who she was before this defining incident, because I think she was a completely different person before the massacre, you know, and then who she is from then on out is a different person.
Well, right. Also who she was trying to become.
Right.
Well, yeah, exactly.
The attempt she was making at a normal life to give her child a normal life.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, and who she was for Bill and with Bill and what she was toying with. I mean, she's just a completely different person. And it's also how now, you know, how she changes once she realizes her daughter's alive, too. There's like a third her.
Yes.
Oh, you know, there's like the pre-massacre Beatrix. There's like the post- waking up and that initial revengeful, and then there's like the third essence of her when she finds out about the daughter, which is who she is at the end of the film.
Here's a question.
Yeah.
Do you think that Bill came in here with the intention of getting everyone killed?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally from the
beginning?
Yep. Because my feeling actually is that maybe he was willing to let it go, but I can't remember what it is because we don't have the subtitles.
Well, why would he have brought everybody there armed?
Just in case.
I don't think so.
Okay, because I just got the feeling
because of that whole speech about how this is his most masochistic moment.
Yeah, and the way he's almost toying with her right now, like I think he knows
he's enjoying this in a way.
Yeah, in a weird way, I feel that way. See, I think she really truly believes it. Like all. That he's there with a blessing almost.
Right.
Like, that's not going to be a problem.
And like you said, you really see the love for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That clearly he does not reciprocate because he's not a human.
Not now.
Right.
But not ever, really. Because she's done horrible things, too. And she knows he's capable of horrible things. But even at this moment where she's her most vulnerable, she is still believing that this is going to be okay because she sees something in him that's not there. It's a sign of her true character, of her own humanity, and the fact that he has none, which is why he's the perfect villain.
Well, yeah.
But then how does that reconcile with that he keeps the daughter and raises her and takes care of her and seems to care?
Because I think it feeds his own ego.
Because he knows that he will use that one day when she comes out of her coma.
Yeah.
Not just that, I think he wants to turn her into the perfect assassin, too.
Well, yeah, but that's part of the revenge, too.
Yeah, but and again, but still, and feeds his own ego.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's so he can have something of himself in the world, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, a decision you will all regret until the day you die.
It was a great shot because they pulled back and all we had to do was see, you know, some of the flashes and these effects. We didn't have to see it, which was great.
Because we've seen so many incarnations of it thus far. Yeah. That's actually the first time we've seen it from, like, outside.
This shot right here reminds me of Tatooine.
it is Tatooine?
It's quite lovely.
It's Dantooine, actually.
Right.
Before it got blowed up.
The American West is just spectacular. Look at that purple hill. It's just ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And now he looks old.
Yeah. Right.
You know, there he didn't look quite as old, but now he looks way older. He's got makeup on.
Right. By the way, the same shirt he had on when he was on the phone with Elle before.
Yeah. I like how he's explaining how there really weren't really 88 of them. I guess they're recapping the whole last film.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a year, basically.
That's right. We have to tell you everything.
Or one
that's
week
happened.
In Grokland.
Right.
Well.
Well, and that this is how information goes between them.
Yeah.
Too, is interesting. Right. You know, like these are the biggest, baddest assassins in the world. And one of them lives in a trailer park. And
this is how
they communicate.
Right.
It's not some, like, go-go gadget, like, arm band or whatever.
But right. I love that all the other assassins are so sleek-looking and he's just living in a trailer, drinking some beer with his spit cup.
Working at a strip club.
Out of shape.
He can't.
Well, they're all
himself.
Actually different. Every single one of the assassins is very different and unique to themselves, which I like.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, because...
But aren't they all retired? Kind of.
Who says? Bud kind of is, but Elle doesn't seem to be.
Elle's not retired.
But Vernita was basically retired. Yeah. She's living her life.
But how do you know what else she was doing on the side?
Right.
She was still in pretty darn
good
shape. Oh, Ren
wasn't retired.
I mean, she held her own in a freaking hand-to-hand fight with someone.
Oh, she held her own,
but
in terms of being active.
Well, who knows? She might have been.
So.
I mean, clearly she was trying to start a family, but...
Right.
She might have still been a little bit active. I mean, Bud clearly isn't because he takes crap from the guy who runs the strip club. I mean, I kept expecting him when I first saw this to, like, kill somebody blow up something or whatever, like, show his specialty.
But
I guess
he doesn't have one.
Yep.
I guess maybe it's just he's Bill's brother and he goes...
He's just Bill's brother.
He's Bill's brother
and
he's a killer,
shoots
exactly.
things whenever Bill, you know, wants him to go do it.
Yeah, he's just Bill's brother. He's his tag-along little brother. You know, he even got him a Hattori Hanzo sword,
right.
even though he doesn't appreciate
it. And etched in the blade. Like, right. Who knows if he even ever knew how to use the freaking sword.
Right, he probably never did, I don't think. No. I kind of get that feeling from him.
I kind of do, too. Because if he had gone far enough to be able to use a sword like that, he probably wouldn't be living this life right now. Like, it changes your mindset when you train that much in martial arts.
But this is where, you know, he's like, you know, he's basically saying, she's going to come and get us. And, you know, he said, we deserve to die.
He's sort of waxing poetic right now.
He's like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Y'all deserve to die.
He had some good roles. I think this is probably his last great role.
Name of the club cracks me up.
Michael Madsen?
The My Oh My Club.
Yeah, Michael Madsen.
Yeah.
I think he did good stuff before this, obviously, but I don't know if he's done anything. It's just that he gets crappy roles.
He has a quality that I just love.
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Totally.
It's like a quietness behind his... It's just really
But
relaxed.
He's got real eyes.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
I love him in Thelma and Louise.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right. He was in Free Willy.
He wasn't Free Willy. Oh, I love him in that, too.
He played the father.
When's that getting on the film Grok schedule?
Free Willy? I think you're going to have to do a little convincing there.
Wasn't that guy in House of a Thousand Corpses?
Yes.
House of what?
Oh.
House of a Thousand Corpses. Yeah.
Isn't that...
Really?
Is he the actor, or was that a...
Pretty sure.
I feel like that was crossed.
Yeah, that's
with the,
him.
That's him.
Band.
Yeah, and he's also
Rejects.
In Devil's Rejects. Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Sure enough.
For show, for show.
Why did I think
House of
a
Thousand
Corpses was
top?
Was
that's one of the scariest movies. Yeah,
that movie scares me.
That scares me more than like any movie.
Was that Rob Zombie?
Rob Zombie.
And
yeah.
And Devil's Rejects was Rob Zombie.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he put him in the Halloween remake, I think.
Yeah, he put him in the Halloween remake, too. I think both of them.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I'll ever be seeing those films.
They're scary. They're pretty good. He did a good job.
Okay.
I give it to Rob Zombie. He knows how to make a horror movie.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Actually, I haven't seen House of a Thousand Corpses.
I mean, I had not
seen scary. That's great.
I love horror movies, and that movie scares the crap out of me.
I'd heard not so good things about Devil's Rejects, though. Or is that just some people not liking it?
I think it's one of those expectations things.
Exactly, because it was so different from the first one.
Yeah.
Which was, this was the sequel.
I actually was disappointed in it.
Me too. I just love the campiness of House of a Thousand Corpses, but still terrifying.
Right.
Yeah.
Getting back on page.
Sorry.
As you were saying, Duncan, but just it's so interesting how here he is. We know he's a stone cold killer, and he lets himself just get pushed around by this.
Because he's clearly not a stone cold killer. Well, he's kind of just a loser.
Or is he just a loser? I mean, a loser who can't kill.
I think he's a loser who has killed, but I don't think it was on his like own. I just don't. He's just like a go nowhere kind of a guy. Like,
you know what I never really thought about that pertains to this that we're talking about is he really Bill's biological brother? Because Bill was an orphan at the random place. I forget what country it's supposed to be, but then he got raised by this old dude that was a pimp. How do we know? I mean, maybe. He's not his biological brother. Maybe it's just somebody that he ran across that they get along really well, but he's not really the same kind of guy as Bill, but they always were just real close for whatever reason friendships happen, you know?
But it's just interesting seeing the, I don't want to call it weakness, but what is the in his character that's just letting this happen? That he's,
he just doesn't care.
He's given up.
He doesn't care.
He's given up.
Yeah. I think he would have been happy all his life to just live in like the middle of nowhere, drinking beers, he probably would have been really great at that, like just having that kind of a normal life.
I would like to know what the story is behind it, though. Like, if there's a backstory where that guy comes from, how he got tied in with Bill, what he did with Bill.
I think it really is his brother.
Because I don't think if it really wasn't his brother, Bill wouldn't have tried so hard to keep him going.
Yeah, there's a loyalty.
And he would not have gotten him that sword.
I just think this is an amazing shot because this guy, he's talking, he's got a shotgun behind him, he's got a shitload of money on the desk. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's all just not good. And then you have Bud, because Bud is one of the, the divas, so to speak. Dead. Mm. And you're just, waiting for him to just, pop.
But there's a reason why he wasn't number one or two on the list.
Right.
Right.
You fall in the middle, there's a reason why.
Yeah.
I just kind of have the impression he was pushed into all this life by Bill, and he could just have, just as easily done without.
Interesting.
That's a good theory. I kind of wonder if they came up at the orphanage, though. I still think maybe they're not biological. Because you're an orphan, how do you tell, you develop different kinds of relationships with people.
Brothers
can
siblings go to orphans, get adopted together a lot.
Yeah.
They stick
or
together.
Or given up together a lot, I guess.
Yeah.
But who says, I don't know.
They share one parent,
Yeah. Plus, there's a loyalty that Bill has in that scene to him. And, a disappointment.
Yeah. Right,
It's his little brother.
Right,
so.
And maybe that's the only other reason, too, why he saves, he keeps the daughter, too. It's like this, blood thing. He almost seems, that makes sense to me just because he's, one of those honor people.
Right.
That maybe, that's the only reason he would even care about them. Because he feels like he has to.
Right.
I just think it's an interesting turn. I would have expected him to be badass, and instead he let himself be walked all over, even by the stripper.
But
he kind of
knows she's there.
But this is my thesis: is that this is his element. He is, he is a hunter.
He's a cowboy.
Yeah,
he is a cowboy. He's not someone who tries to make money for this schmuck in a strip club and for all that kind of crap. He's not that guy. This is who he is. Right now, and the problem is he doesn't have a chance to live it enough, and so anything less is just I don't know what to do with mine. It's like a soldier, and he needs to keep on fighting, and he has no war to fight.
Right, I can see that.
So,
I mean, he clearly, he has a sense of things. He knows how to defend himself. He wasn't clever enough to see L's trap later.
Right,
but he is clever enough,
just out of practice,
to tell that something's going on. And he's clearly cold-blooded enough to do something like bury someone alive underground.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely.
But again, I just don't think he cares. I feel kind of bad for him.
Yeah, there's a pathetic quality.
Right.
True.
When it's because when people, and I feel that way a lot of times, I feel really bad for people who don't, that either A, don't seem to care about anything in life, don't have one single singular passion or driving force. Like, I feel really bad for them. And I also feel bad for people who don't seem to like themselves in any kind of way.
Well, it's been, but going back to this, I mean, the thesis would be that, they haven't found, the thing that would give them their happiness.
Right.
And be, so they could pursue it.
And but sometimes I feel like some people are so spoiled, like, not like spoiled as in, given things. I think like spoiled, like rotted.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That there is nothing.
Well, it's like he didn't know what to do with himself, so he just followed his brother,
And two, I think it's fair to say that probably if she hadn't come after him and if nothing really special had ever happened, he might not have ever heard anybody else again.
He might have just lived in mediocrity the rest of his life.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
might have heard that he got shot in an alley being mugged or something, because he was drunk. And like, right. I mean,
right.
That just seems to be the path he's on.
Mm-hmm.
This is great suspense. I mean, we're all outside with her. I like how she's got the mask.
But we don't really expect Bud to do anything. I mean, it's all sort of perceived by the music and
we don't know.
You know, her being agitated.
I love it.
That was just so shocking when I saw this.
But that's exactly why it works.
Yeah. Well, and that's the kind of guy he is. Yep. You're going to come up to me with a sword.
I'm going
to
shoot
you. He's like, I'm scared of you. Like, I'm not going to mess around and, like, get in a sword fight with you because I know you'll kill me.
I know what you're capable of.
Right.
So I'm just going to have a shotgun.
That's right.
And you know what I love is that he's got cartridges filled with rock salt.
Rock salt, that's what it was.
Rock salt is something that you can't trace. It'll absorb into your skin once you're shot with it, but it's hard enough that it'll, cause damage.
Plus,
but
it's going to hurt.
Yeah, well, of course. But it's not spherical either.
I love
so
how he kicks the sword and the sword flies over and sticks into that barrel.
Yeah, they couldn't have planned that.
And now it's on the ground. Oh.
Oh, nice.
Damn it.
Nice.
Just found that QT. Might want to go fix that on the digitally remastered edition.
What gets me is he clearly, you can reload your own shotgun shells, so he clearly has some that are prepped already for some kind of occasion where he's going to shoot someone and he doesn't want it to be traced and he doesn't want to really kill him. He just wants to disable him.
But he also seems like the kind of guy who would just sit around drunk, like out in his front yard and like
doing weird
shoot
shit.
It like a, like, an armadillo or something, you know?
Yeah. But you wouldn't specially load someone. You don't go to a store and buy cartridges with rock salt in them.
Sure. Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Like maybe he just like shoots the animals or something. Cause he's just weird.
Mm.
Oh man. I like how she's pale there.
No.
But I love that he's the one that takes her, like, puts her in the worst position.
Right.
That almost really gets
because
her.
Because he has no ego.
Yeah.
Everybody else that she comes up against
fight her.
Has ego, and that's what destroys them in the end. Mm-hmm. He's just like, I don't care.
I'm going to bury you alive.
Yep. And you might just kill me later.
Yeah.
Whatevs.
Mm-hmm.
Peace.
Yeah, in a way, he's the one who thinks out everything the most.
Sword stuck in the barrel again.
Right.
By the way.
Uh-oh.
You know, he thought of the sedative. He knows what he's going to do. He thought of the rock salt.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the strategy.
He's
not going to engage you in any sword play of any sort.
Or even a gun battle. I mean, like,
he just doesn't care that much because he has no ego, He's just going to,
I like the word that Elle uses when she's putting him down later, bushwhacker,
Yeah.
He likes to bushwhack people. Basically, he waits in ambush and gets them when they're vulnerable.
Yeah, okay, and that's exactly what he did. Exactly.
Yeah.
He is a bushwhacker.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's just, but my point.
And there's no honor in that.
That's his strength.
Right.
There's no fairness in that.
Right. But
there's
that,
no sense of,
that's what he does.
Code.
That's his specialty.
Right.
He's the bushwhacker.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's a place for that if you're trying to put together some kind of team or something to do something or, depending on what kind of job you have, you just need some dude that'll just go get it done and not worry about it.
The bushwhacker.
Which is funny because that position on a team or that point of view is the complete antithesis of what Bill claims he stands for.
Right. Right.
And his style of doing things.
And what looks like everyone else in the team was also on board with. It's like he's the oddball in that way.
But maybe that's the way you develop, you know, when you have, when you know, you're growing up, you have this brother who's just like, is the kind of person who's just going to go right into someone's face and get something done, mm-hmm. you know, that he just developed the skill of being the one in the shadows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But again, which is probably why he doesn't care about anything.
Right.
I don't know. Gosh.
Oh.
I love how just one-dimensional her character is, too. Yep. It's like sometimes you just need it. Not everybody has layers.
I like how greedy he is. He wants $1 million.
Yeah, but you know, in their world?
Well, yeah.
That's not really.
But still.
But he said it's a priceless sword.
Right. Yeah. It's worth way more than that.
Yeah, it's worth way more than $1 million.
It's like saying, I want $100,000 for that sword.
Yeah.
Right. It's like.
Oh, and she's evil because she smokes, by the way.
Yep.
That's right.
But I love the cliche with the eye patch and the cigarette.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, $1 million, if you think about it, isn't enough to change his life. But he could live comfortably like he lives for the rest of his life.
He doesn't have to worry about it.
Right.
Right.
Actually, he's not too greedy.
No.
No. When you get down to it, for what he has,
he just wants
what he asks,
he just wants to sustain.
He's content with where he is.
He just wants to stay where he is. Yep.
Yeah.
Poor Bud.
The full moon.
Oh, it's all. Hey, what a coincidence! It's a full moon. I want to see it be like a half moon.
Now
sometime.
I love this. By the way, how they crop the
Me
screen
too.
Right here.
Let's do that one day in a movie.
Yeah.
Or quarter moon.
Do you notice this?
Yes. It's 4x3 as opposed to 2x5.
So we're getting ready for it being inside the box.
Yeah.
Right.
That's we're in a box.
That's interesting. I'd forgotten about.
It's a box in a box in a box.
Are we in a box?
Don't put me in a box.
I'm
not a white one.
I'm on a horse.
Not in a white box.
No.
Oh, wait. This sequence.
No boxes.
Oh, it's one of my favorite things.
Is one of my favorite things in a movie ever.
Ever. Because I remember thinking, how is she going to get out of this?
And again, where I, after watching these two movies, I have been a lot less afraid of things in life because I always just feel like if Beatrix Kiddo can punch her way out of a coffin, then I could be buried alive.
Right.
I don't even know what it's just like this.
Whoa.
There was just, she really is like the person, she gets put into every scary movie scenario in these two movies and is just so amazingly heroic that she gets out of them somehow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he dug up Paula Schultz and he opened the coffin. That is disgusting.
Well, because he's going to put her in the coffin. Fell,
oh, I know, but that's the thing.
Fell open. No, he's not. They put her in just a plain old
pine,
that's right.
pine
box.
Pine
right.
box right
yeah.
there.
But no, but they have the coffin, and they opened it up.
Well, they had to pop it open. It just looks cooler from an audience perspective.
Exactly.
From the shadow.
Exactly. On the other hand, you know, a coffin doesn't necessarily, it's not designed to be locked shut. I mean,
oh, no.
You just you
might
tipped
have
it over,
open.
It would pop open.
Well, he probably had to pull it out with his truck. So it probably popped open.
Oh, good idea.
Because how
good
else
point.
Would he get it out of there?
Good point.
That's heavy.
I think he popped it open so they can steal whatever they can from Paula Schultz.
Oh, that's also not a bad idea. Because does that say she died in 1898?
If they've got no problem digging up a grave, then I don't think they have any problem opening up the casket.
Robbing
and
it. Like,
robbing
hey, well,
it.
Let's check out what's in here. Huh? Yeah.
I love how just. He's just. I don't want to say he's a brute, but everything's just very physical. He's just throwing the ladder.
He's
everything's just.
Dirty and gross. Yep. Look at his ugly shirt, too. I mean, if we just want to, like, get down to the nitty-gritty, this guy is just, like,
all
repulsive.
Sweaty.
But he wore the cleanest ugly shirt he had.
Yeah, he did.
And his buddy's
looks brand new, like he just got it out of plastic wrap from the airport store.
And his buddy's the shortest, ugliest guy around. And he
drinks beer. Don't make fun of dwarves.
He's not a dwarf. He's a short
guy. Sure he is. He's from Moria. You can tell by the mustache.
What are you talking about?
It was a very lame Lord of the Rings reference.
It was super lame.
No, but I do like the character, though. Like, just the fact that he's got this little stumpy dude digging a big hole, you know, digging the grave extra deep.
And notice, actually, that Bud is wearing a white hat. He's not wearing a black hat. He's wearing a white hat. So what does that tell you? I mean, it's like totally playing on the whole, you know, who's good and who's evil.
Mm, yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah, he plays dirty. I love
it. He does.
He plays completely dirty.
But then it again shows you how well she is conditioned because she is capable of fighting any kind of foe.
Right. Mm.
By the way, I find it interesting. If they were really going to bury her alive, mm-hmm. there are ways to do it so that she wouldn't be able to get out.
I don't think his intention is to bury her alive until she dies. He's burying her in the ground, and then he's going to have Ellen Bell come and get her.
Yeah, that's what they...
Oh, yeah.
He said she's buried in Paula.
Right, go look for that name in the graveyard. So he's not really like leaving her there to die. He's just like detaining her until someone else can come and take care of it.
Yeah. Right.
Kind of wonder what they did with the other coffin. Or maybe they just meant for it to be there just long enough for Elle to come get it. I don't know. It seems like somebody would notice.
He does want his... I mean, because it actually goes back to his crass nature. All he wants is the money. He doesn't care about her. He doesn't care about killing her.
No.
It's not about stopping her. There's no honor. He just wants to, you know, he buries her. He gets the money from Elle. Fine, go get, you know.
He goes and buys some beers.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, what I mean is the other coffin, the old coffin.
Right.
Like, do they just leave it sitting out? I mean,
I don't think so.
They'd have to take it somewhere and do something with it.
Dump it somewhere. What, they don't even care.
They don't care. Just roll down a hill.
Like Sophie.
Roll it down a hill.
Roll it down a hill.
Standard procedure.
Yep. It's in their assassination squad handbook.
Right, right.
When in doubt,
roll it down a hill.
Roll it down a hill. Into a body of water.
If you forget, there's reference guides in assassin class on every flight you can take over to Tokyo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Oh man, that's a cool great.
Shot. Oh great!
She's got great boots.
Great.
Oh yeah, I remember thinking that.
$20. Those are old gringos.
Yep.
I spent a little time in Texas recently at some boot stores.
I like how I like how they did the lighting within the coffin because you know there's not a lot of light, but clearly they're just shoving the light in there for that.
I love
purpose.
That she's freaking out though too.
Right.
Yeah.
Because
she's
human.
Yeah,
she's human.
You know what? Look at that though, Sarah. They justify it. The headlights of the truck. Are pointing at
I know. Yeah, no, there was light hitting them, but I mean that is an awful lot of light pumping in there.
True.
So and then they use it to great effect, and that basically once
it
gets sealed off, it's all dark.
Yeah.
And then it's great because then I think you hear the moving around.
I was just impressed. Like I got what you were saying. I was just impressed that they actually had a justification.
Oh, totally.
And now we get to know about Pai Mei. Oh,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, all we're doing is we're hearing the sound of everything being dragged over. And we're not seeing anything. We're just what she's hearing.
Mm-hmm. Which is all you would have in there anyway.
Except for the tiny little glint.
Yep. Intense in the theater.
That means they had to have had at least a tiny bit of front light just so they could catch that little extra glint in there.
Right.
We can't even tell what...
It's the flashlight.
I think we're looking down at her face, actually.
Yeah, it's the flashlight.
Either way, they just had to have the slightest bit amount of light so you could register it on...
It's still that same side shot.
I think that's the same side shot.
Yeah.
That's another question. How do they shoot this? They probably wouldn't have put a camera in it, right? I mean, this is just staged someplace.
Oh yeah,
no, but that's why you have the sound. I mean, the thing is that when you're shooting something like this, you still have to expose for black. So actually, there is light on there, and then they basically expose.
Right.
You close the lens down.
Notice they went back to black and white.
Yep.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But that's interesting because it's almost like feels like she's going to die again.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
That's a nice that's observation.
Whoa,
thank
Duncan.
You.
Whoa. So that's why I went to black and white. Because she thinks she might die. Nice.
Because it might be the end.
It might be the end.
That's right.
Or is it just the beginning?
Well, you know, actually, but you know, at the beginning when the wedding was... Actually, no, the wedding was in black and white. So she didn't expect to die there.
No, but the very first scene we see in both movies is a close-up on her face.
Yes.
She's kind of sweaty, kind of bloody.
Yes.
And
I'm not
death is
that.
In the balance.
But when she's getting married, is death in the balance?
No.
No. Or maybe...
Well, yes, it was actually later.
But she didn't know.
We did.
Wow.
Maybe it's... She's in a position where she might get killed. Because that would be analogous to the sword fight and the wedding and the other scenes and this one.
Maybe. I'm just enjoying her kind of concentrating on what she's going to do. Because
is that
this,
your subtle way
and
of
this is
to
the
shut
other
up?
Great.
No, I don't know.
Scene.
I just...
The other great scene. This and the
when
part in the hospital.
Right,
and
when
the
she
hospital.
Wakes up, exactly.
And waking up in the hospital and making her foot move. I mean, this is the same kind of thing. It's the moments when she's truly down and she really has to reach deep inside of herself and use only her will to continue.
She really is so well trained and just. it adds to her legend in a way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, that, yeah.
Not
well,
anybody
and her
could
ability
do that.
To use willpower.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, that is a quality of any superhero, you
yes.
know?
Fire good.
And they do the same thing here that they did, you know, in the previous film with the toe part, too, is where you know that she's going to be somewhere for a long time.
So they don't have to show
So they're going to give you new information.
So they're going to give you new information.
The information
right
that you need for
well,
when
it also
comes
backs
out.
Up
yep.
yeah, like
when
that.
She's going to, what she's going to do.
Right, of course.
Well, that yeah, well, that's in a way, this tells us exactly how she's going to get out of it, mm-hmm. which is great.
Because I remember really seeing cool. this for the first time and getting really sucked into this whole storyline and mm-hmm. totally forgetting she was in a coffin.
Right.
So then when we shot back there and she starts to punch through it, it was just...
But you do have this
really
vague
awesome.
Sense
but
that
it's, but it's a great
this is
going to
mean something.
Yeah, it's
right.
a great
this,
payoff.
There's going to be something. You do get the sense it's going to be something, though.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, my first reaction is, oh, my gosh, why are we here now? I want to see how she gets out of the coffin. But then it continues. It's like, okay, there's got to be something.
You know,
something
is this on. Like in Empire Strikes Back when Luke is training with Yoda and then does the whole thing with under the tree?
Sure, Sarah.
Sure.
Well,
sure. What are you going to be like that for?
Yeah, like her and Pai Mei.
Well, yeah, it's yeah. the time. It's the time with the mentor.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was, you know, that's a bit of a stretch. he's not in a place he can't necessarily get out of. That's more of a illusion to teach him something.
True.
I love how innocent and naive she looks sometimes in these flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She does a really good job of capturing that.
Yeah.
Because it's so subtle, I mean.
And you see how fresh and young she is.
Right.
She doesn't have all this experience
right,
yet.
Right.
Or all this extra bitterness of revenge.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Well, also, I mean, this is before, you know, before her, she becomes an assassin, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder
actually, after this, she becomes an assassin. She kills
Yeah, but she
him.
Still is kind of an assassin.
Yeah, I think she's already an assassin. Yeah.
She's already trained.
She just
already,
hasn't.
Okay.
She's already been trained in the way of the samurai sword.
Right.
So she's already really skilled in that when she comes to Pai Mei.
Okay, so then this is just like the additional. Okay, so it's not like Luke. It's the additional.
Right. This may be like the final like
she's
key.
In she's in her graduate courses.
This is her
right,
this is her
courses.
PhD.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
exactly.
right.
Because, you know, she knows how to fight. She knows how to kill.
PhD in assassinology.
Right.
Assassinology.
But this is when she is, you know, yeah, and this is the whole, this is before she has like the complete honor because she doesn't have a mentor, you know, as of this point.
Mm.
And, I mean, this is when she's still doing stuff for because of choice. You know,
right.
she's choosing this life.
And I love the foreshadowing in this scene when they talk about the 5-point.
Palm exploding heart
technique. And how he won't show that to many people.
Right.
And he didn't teach it to Bill.
No.
Apparently. Or did he?
That explodes. Yep, I know how to do that, so watch yourselves. I also know the Vulcan death grip, so
nice.
I'm just saying.
Nice.
Oh, the Vulcan death grip, yeah.
Don't
do
challenge
know,
Heidi Hilliger.
Do you know Jedi mind tricks?
Yeah, I got it all.
You got it all.
I got it all. I got it all.
Very impressive.
I also know how to play the flute, a long wooden flute.
I'll try not to turn that into a metaphor.
I was just going to say, how long is your flute?
I don't know if
you
can handle it, Taylor.
I don't know. I'll take that challenge.
Wow. Sarah, I think we're witnessing something extraordinary right now.
I have no words.
Was Wait, that too inappropriate?
Hang on. I'll be in my bunk. That's a Firefly reference.
All right, we're looking at his rings here. Because I was trying to... He's
well,
only wearing
green,
one ring.
The green one is still there
I
that
don't
we
see
saw
the skull.
In the first film.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was the skull and
the red
the
ring.
Red.
And yep. his sword had the red gem.
Well, the sword may not really matter because we see Bill's sword later and it's actually wrapped in black.
Mm-hmm.
And so that could have... But he could have been too young then to have gotten the Hattori Hanzo sword. I love the quality of the film right here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did they
changes.
Shoot this? Yeah, they it's very grainy. Yeah. Like it's got this grittiness
it looks, well,
to it.
It looks like it was shot on 16. Quite
yeah,
frankly.
A little bit.
Right. It actually looks like some of the kung fu films from the 70s.
Yeah.
80s.
Hmm. It'd be interesting to see if the rest is like this. Because that previous
scene
the whole part with Pai Mei is like this.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so maybe they shot, either they shot or they shot a very grainy 35 stock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I don't think they could have made this effect in post. Pretty sure you can't really get this. No,
this is the way you shoot it,
well.
Yeah. But that's because that's a heap load of grain.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I love watching the grain dance around. Oh, that is so cool. That's a great shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How they get both of them in the shot.
It's sort of like that double exposure earlier with Hattori Hanzo and her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In volume one.
But this is the kind of shot that, you know, you'd expect someone else would have used in a movie, and I've never seen that before. Where literally you've got them both on the left side of the frame. One's in the mirror and one's
in
the
mirror. Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell she looks totally in love right
yep.
now.
Yeah. Yep. And it's interesting because it's not that kind of like, you know, dumb chick flick kind of love either, because she kind of loves him in this way where she respects him as, you know, for who he is as a man, as a thinker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's her mentor. Mm-hmm. Other than just her lover.
Right.
And he's also kind of like
a father figure
to her.
Right. Yes.
You know, and it's interesting.
Because, you know, we don't really know her background either.
Yeah.
We don't know where she came from or why she's with Bill or how that all transpired.
Right.
At all. Maybe they'll get into that in volume three.
Oh, Pai Mei. And we're going to get some snap zooms.
Some snap zooms.
Yeah.
What?
We only had one snap zoom in Kill Bill.
Okay, you have more in this one.
There he is.
So you know what snap zoom is. I do not.
I'll point it out. You know what it is when you see it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I guess they shot this whole thing in 16, or very grainy emulsion.
I love it how they add that element of you don't really know how old this guy is, but they imply that it's almost like he's hundreds of years old.
Yeah.
Right. Well, this is where it kind of goes into the whole kung fu film reality.
Mm-hmm. We're in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon world right now with this whole thing.
I don't even
really
think
love that.
I think
sounds
like
wire work, but yeah. But yeah, it's that same world where that kind of stuff is possible.
Right. I think this goes into more of the cheesy.
I love him. I love everything about him.
Yep.
Right.
Mm. Do you like his fabulous eyebrows?
I love his fabulous eyebrows. I love his insults.
Mm-hmm. They're very creative. I wish I could insult as well as him.
That's right.
Because he doesn't even need swear words.
No. He doesn't even need to talk.
You bray like an ass.
That's right. Oh.
There we go.
Yep.
That's snap zoom.
Oh, okay. Oh, snap zoom.
Yeah. Right.
You said it so fast, I thought it was some weird, like.
Well, that's interesting. He says
term.
That Bill is your master.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's how you speak in Kung Fu Land.
Yeah.
Well, true, but that's still. I mean, that's pretty. It's pretty heavy.
Yeah, it is heavy.
That is heavy.
That he trained her in that capacity. Yeah. She follows his tutelage, as it were.
Well, if someone calls someone your master, it's pretty heavy crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, except if you think of it in martial arts terms, it's heavy, but it's also not as heavy as you would think about it just in civilian terms.
No,
like
I understand.
If you're thinking of a master, like that's almost like they own you. But
it's more
master is a rank.
I want a beard.
Yeah, I got that.
God.
But you can tell he already loves her.
Exactly.
Right.
That's why he's being so tough on her.
Yep.
He wants her to be the best.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he swore there.
He's just basically, you know, she had to mention the Japanese, and she doesn't know Cantonese and everything like that. So, but he, but he is basically
walking with a tude.
Yeah,
I'll show him.
Well, exactly. Her walk is different. She, physically, actually, she is different. Well, a little different.
Yeah, she's just more mature, immature, and naive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Yeah.
There we go. Tai Chi sword. Only need one hand.
Yeah, and that is actually, yeah, she already knows some kung fu. Like,
yeah.
It isn't like she only knows, you know, Bushido and Kendo and all that.
Yes.
He's always going for the beard.
Always going for the beard.
Is he going to toss it? Yep.
Because that's how you know he means business. He's,
wow. And I like how they use the sound effects. Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
Oh, I did too.
Right?
Yeah.
See, that's what I mean by Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon Land.
Right, well, yeah.
Well, true.
People can float and fly and, you know, all that.
But I was thinking more of the conventional, you know, Chinese kung fu.
I know.
Films.
I was using a modern reference that some of our audience might know better than some of the old.
I'm pretty sure that it uses both eras of kung fu type films in this.
Well, that's the thing. Because Crouching Tiger, I mean, I understand what you mean by Crouching Tiger.
Because, like, the wire work
and
stuff like that.
But the shooting style, you know, that was totally art film.
Well, and the characterization of him and the fact that he's at the top of a mountain and like all of that's very
classic.
That's more
classic 70s kung fu movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is definitely, this is like super homage to.
New kung fu movies are amazing though. They're just like, I mean, Crouching Tiger is a highlight of modern kung fu movies in the fact like it has, it not only is it beautiful, but it has a great story.
A great story.
But most of them, I mean, they're very, like, fantasyful like that now. Right. I mean, some of them don't even take place in, like, the real world.
Right. And that's the thing, is that there's that element of quite not real worldishness to this.
The music's great right here.
Mm-hmm.
This is classic 70s kung fu movies. Yeah.
Yep.
Duncan, how's her fighting?
How's my fighting?
How's her fighting
slow.
Right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
But she's trying to use kung fu.
Right.
I think what she's... Because I took kung fu for a little while, so I can kind of like identify what she's doing.
Okay.
I mean, it would probably be like the only fighting style that I even have any sort of like...
And she's definitely trying to
real knowledge of.
Tiger Crane.
Yep.
Like that's, the form is very obvious that she's trying to use.
Okay.
The thing is, it is very slow.
Because they used her, not Zoe Bell. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it may not be her primary style either. Like, she probably knows... Like, the character probably knows kung fu, but there's a lot of ways to fight, like some Israeli styles that are much more efficient, much more deadly.
It's almost like she's trying to pull out these very classic, very stereotypical forms in front of him because he's a kung fu master.
Right. Yeah. When he said, "Let me see your tiger crane match my eagle's claw," he wanted to see her kung fu. So she may have more effective ways of fighting.
Oh, the whole thing with the rice.
That's what they always do, too, though. It's like,
whip it.
The master is always like, come back tomorrow.
That's why I'm comparing it to, like, you know, to Luke with Yoda. This is the same type of thing. It's the whole
Karate Kid, Mr. Miyagi.
Well, like, not exactly.
I thought of that, too, but I compare it to Luke because Luke is isolated and she's isolated. You know, there's no distractions from anyone else. Okay, granted, there's R2 there, but R2 stays out of the way. Mm-hmm. So it's just the two of them, and they're just dealing with that kind of stuff.
That, and also Yoda and this guy are both the master that lives on the mountain kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
And they go seek them out specifically. Mr. Miyagi is different because... He kind of finds the kid, like, and it kind of develops over time. It's the master and apprentice thing, but it's doesn't have the same meaning behind it.
Right.
Oh, nice.
It's a beautiful effect.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, that was good makeup.
Reminds me of my old days in kung fu class. We used to use cinder block walls.
I like that. It's the wood that should fear your hand.
beard toss.
Yes. And snap zoom back. Yeah.
Will. You know, there it is. There's her will again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting. They did that in front of a projection.
Mm. It looks like a screen.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's all. Yeah. That's basically all front projection.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that's like, you know, the style of those kind of films.
Exactly. And that's fine. Yeah. Even this is in that style. And I think that's probably, he likes hitting her.
Oh, I love that.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, we're getting our own little kung fu film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, her style.
Tucked away.
I don't know form very well, but it looks like her style's getting better there.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was intentional. Mm-hmm. Bless you.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's okay, Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
There's the beard toss. Actually, now the beard, it actually, as an acting thing, the beard toss actually allows him to emote in different ways to express what he's doing.
Because that was definitely more
great.
Of a slow, low, like,
it's like, you know, those fan languages.
Yes. It's the I approve what you're doing, though you cannot see. Oh, and he makes her eat the rice. She can't eat the rice. But you must eat the rice with the chopsticks.
Mental conditioning.
But it's Will. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's helped. I mean, she obviously already naturally has it in spades. And he is just trying to encourage that. And without that, she would never accomplish anything she accomplishes.
Yeah. Oh, if you want to eat like a dog. That's right. He puts it on the floor. He's intense.
Yeah, he is.
He is.
Yeah. When you really see here, like, she's earned the right to be able to do all the things that she can do now.
Right.
Right. Right. Not that we didn't think that she hadn't.
Well,
but,
she's
but
not, like, we, some we, superhuman. She trained really hard for all of these
right.
things.
And actually, right. In the previous film, we got to see her prove herself. And this is the way we see her prove herself in this film. Because we haven't really... We haven't really seen it all that much. And now we definitely see it. And it's just great how they take their time. They just really take their time.
Yeah. Well, because it makes you feel the way she feels.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we should, of course, mention that this film, like all of Quentin Tarantino's previous films, were edited by Sally Menke, who unfortunately died this past year.
Oh, wow.
Actually died in 2010.
Oh, that's right. I heard
during
about
the heat. Wave, right?
I don't know if it was during the heat wave, but I think she was like hiking up in Runyon Canyon or something like that, and they... found her dead.
I think it was during when we had the hottest days of.
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Right. Yeah, remember. And we're back.
And then
into
we'll see
the
through the dirt.
Yeah.
P.S. When they show the graveyard again, that other corpse and coffin was not there.
Yes.
I like how they missed a nail.
Yeah. Well, I like that though. That makes it kind
seem
of realistic.
More authentic. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you can also it orients you as to what you're looking at better.
Oh, it does. Yeah.
I was so claustrophobic watching this.
Yeah.
Oh, but that's actually. I think there was a movie with Ryan Reynolds recently where he's stuck in a car.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
I had no desire to see it.
This is where I developed my patented "if anybody buries me alive" procedure,
which is you just do what she does.
Nope. It's just don't freak out. And just keep your mind calm until you run out of oxygen and pass out on your own, because there's no point in being all freaked out. You know, if this is the last moment of your life, I'm not going out screaming like a baby.
Yeah.
And I know enough things by heart where I could probably recite songs, entire movies, and books and things to myself until I ran out of oxygen and lost consciousness. Now, my second
really
procedure... is doing this.
Yeah,
I was going to say, punching your way.
Plan B.
Plan B is punching your way out of the coffin.
And then you just hope they didn't, you know, bury the coffin upside down.
Well,
you'd feel it.
I think.
You think?
And then you
unless
just,
you're in space.
And then you would just flip over and then...
A space burial?
Well, that's assuming you've got enough room to flip over.
Ooh, space buried alive.
Yeah.
How
would that work?
No one steal that idea.
Let's start training for it.
You just create a vacuum and let it suck you out.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good thing that she had a random straight razor, like
in her boot,
hidden about her person. Yeah,
but of course she would.
But she would.
But of course she would. She would have like lots of things. That's it.
It's like that can't be tasty.
But yeah. I love that. That's what separates her from us. You know, is that when she first gets into the coffin, she's having that panic, that freak that all of us would have.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But here she is with her will. She's like, all right, I'm going to just try to get the hell out of here.
Yep.
And I'm going to stop being a baby about it.
Right. I like how she's like, yes, I am so pleased that I got that off. I like that little moment. It's great. She's like, I love you, Switchblade. Actually, no.
Or straight razor.
Straight razor, yeah. It was a straight razor.
Yeah. I can already see, like, that pine that they used is pretty flimsy.
Is pine usually flimsy?
Yeah, normal, like 1-inch thick pine stuff is. That's the stuff you use for beginners in class for board breaking.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Except people don't break boards from that shallow.
Not usually.
No.
I heard about some people that can.
She was trained.
She was trained.
Fortunately.
To break wood that close to her body.
However, if you've ever seen some of the old videos of Bruce Lee's 1-inch punch that he used to demonstrate at karate tournaments, it's just like that.
Yeah.
It's that distance.
Well, Bruce Lee could have made it out of here.
Yeah.
I believe in that. I believe in that. So could have Houdini.
Houdini.
Probably the only three people who could have made it out of here. Bruce Lee,
Chuck Norris could make it out because he would, you know, bend the curvature of the earth with his mustache and make the coffin dump him out by itself.
So I like how basically she's punched.
I love this part.
I love this shot.
Oh, it's so good.
It's so good.
Right.
And then when she comes out of the ground.
Yeah. I don't even know how they did this shot. It's so good.
It's so good.
Well, I mean, that's not a realistic shot, but it definitely expresses what's going on.
Right.
It's pretty cool.
She's not even that deep underground.
Right.
Whatever, 6 feet. So, and she's like a zombie.
Yep. Yep. So you get that kind of movie, too.
For that brief little moment. Oh, man.
Someone's going to get it, aren't they? Yes, they are. Oh, I love this part where she walks across the street.
Yes. And it's like all the dust is blowing off her.
Yeah. May I have some water, please?
Oh, right. Great. That's amazing.
Ah, fresh air.
Yep. And we all take a drink of water.
It's like that movie, 136 Hours. I've never been so thirsty during a film my entire life.
136 Hours?
Isn't that what it is called?
127
hours. Oh, 27 hours.
I didn't see that's fun.
I made it longer.
It totally looks like a zombie film.
What is exactly? It totally looks like, he looks like a zombie.
Yeah.
You're right. She does look like a zombie. He must think, like, I'm in a zombie movie.
I love her disposition, though.
Yeah. She smiles.
Yep. She totally
has
looked,
her dignity.
And she batted her eyelashes.
And she totally looked like a zombie. Yeah. And there's Daryl Hannah again.
Mm-hmm. She's awesome.
She's looking so badass in her Thunderbird?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Classic.
Yeah.
Classic restored modified.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a Trans Am.
It's a Trans Am.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the dudes driving around in the Trans Ams.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I don't know what the music is, but it's cool.
Yeah, it's good music.
It's got a 60s feel to it.
Well, yeah, totally 60s feel.
We're going to get one of those really cool, like the I'm going to kill you music is coming up soon with the eyes.
Yep.
Yeah. And that razor blade around his neck.
Yeah.
Great.
Mm-hmm. It's like, she's bringing him $1 million, but he doesn't even put a shirt on. He's just like...
Oh, he doesn't care.
I love how she even dresses like Bill. Gosh, she's such a disciple.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true, huh?
I like how they just cut out of the music and went right to the sun.
They don't really go into her. It's like she wants to be Beatrix.
Oh, yeah.
She can't be Beatrix.
She can't.
So she just has so to settle for imitation. Because
she doesn't have the strength of spirit.
Yeah. She's trying to please Bill any way she can.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Did you guys notice the bottom step in front of his trailer was broken when she walked up?
Mm-mm.
No.
It's broken.
Okay.
Better be broken when they go back to that
Snaps.
Oh, she doesn't have any. She doesn't have her boots on. Oh, man.
Well, no, she took them off to get the razor blade.
Yeah.
She don't need them.
But she could have put them back on.
Nah.
She's tough.
Well, I know she's
tough. Like, I'm not going back over to that box.
No.
But she's walking
through
the...
You can choke on it.
She's walking through the desert with no boots.
She better look out for the Jawas walking through that canyon.
Gosh, that's a gorgeous shot. Beautiful. Yeah, totally the purple. Like it's gorgeous.
Yeah, the multiple color. What do you know what state they shot this in?
Purple Mountains Majesty.
It's truth.
New Mexico, Arizona.
They don't just put that in the head.
No, song. No,
you ain't just whistling Dixie.
No.
Maybe Utah. Oh, wow. So she sees her drive up. Neat little time thing.
Yep. Little back up in time.
That's a nice shot, too, how it goes over from one over the shoulder to the other.
Actually, this may be Morcone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here it comes.
If not, it's Morcone-esque. Here we go.
It's on.
It's on.
I'm going to kill you. Oh, the eye's twitching.
Okay, it's shiny.
Oh, it's a
shiny eye patch.
Oh, that's a Texas funeral. Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
I love this shirt. Says Quality Store.
Yep. Oh, Bud, you're so stupid.
You are stupid.
You are so rock stupid for being a semi-smart guy.
Well, you know,
but he doesn't care anymore.
Like, yeah, but
it goes back to that.
I still think it all goes back to that.
He just doesn't care.
He doesn't care. He doesn't figure that Elle's going to kill him.
I don't think he cares.
I think maybe he thinks that she won't because
of
she.
Bill.
Yeah, because
that blender,
of Bill.
That blender is disgusting. Yeah. Like dirty. Yeah, actually, maybe that's what it is, of course. Maybe that's right. Maybe he doesn't care because he knows that Bill's is his ultimate protection. No one can touch him because, well, there's Bill.
Right.
You do anything, Bill will get you.
Mm hmm.
The mason jars. Love
yes.
I love a mason jar margarita. Sounding pretty good right about now.
Mm-hmm. It actually is.
Yeah.
Just slops it.
And he misses. Look at the dirty blender of that. It's just whatever.
So
what does it say? Chicken champ? Oh, man.
He doesn't even look in the bag.
Mm-mm.
He's just like, whatever.
Yep.
It's funny how he actually thinks, it seems like he actually feels so safe, he thinks he can just sit down with her and just chat.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Because clearly he wouldn't be able to defend himself that quickly, that close against her, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the great mystery. That's the great mystery of Bud, really.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, dude.
I mean, he's,
but he's not stupid. That's
no, he's
thing.
Clever enough to you know be effective in his bushwhacking, as it were.
Right.
But then he just totally lets his guard down against such a potentially deadly foe.
I like that her eye patch is reflective.
Yeah. It's great. It's a great
it's
choice.
A great touch.
So why wouldn't he? You know, why wouldn't he? Maybe. Kill her. It's just like
because of Bill.
Is that my money? I'll kill you.
Well, right, well, because true. She's just one of the other assassins. I mean, I think one of them killing each other right now is actually pretty unpredictable as far as their lives. I mean, they've known each other for a long time and done a lot of stuff. Why now? Why now would they kill each other?
Right. Especially
because
because
a common enemy is attacking them. That seems like even weirder time for them to attack.
Exactly. Like they need to stick together.
Right.
Because she's coming after them.
True. Right. But no one. Yeah. Because the thing is, no one knows that Elle is just so deeply debased in her spirit. I mean, we think Bill's bad. Actually, she's worse than Bill.
I don't think
she really is worse.
Yeah,
she's not. Oh, yeah. She's not as strong, but she is worse.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure.
Absolutely.
Because she has no code.
She has no
honor,
code.
Nothing.
Well, she killed.
And
she killed
Pai Mei. Do whatever she wants.
Here's my thing: why kill Bud? Except that she just doesn't want to give him the money, and to her, $1 million probably doesn't even matter.
Well, but
you know, I mean, she could go get $1 million every day.
I think she has no intention. Well, she clearly had no intention of giving him the money.
She's just a bitch.
Basically.
Like, I mean, let's just call a spade a spade. I mean, that's what's going on here.
Right. And
try to, you know, and she did try to kill Beatrix when her guard was completely down.
Yeah.
And she would have done it, but Bill said, no, don't do it. And she knew just the consequence of.
Because the only person she's afraid of is Bill.
Yeah, there we go. Oh, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
The fact that it gets him more than once and in the face. Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
Have fun picking up that money now.
Didn't see that one coming, but then, of course, it made sense.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Actually, that's a good point. When I watched this the first time, I wasn't expecting the snake. I wasn't expecting her to kill
not
him
at all.
No.
It was shocking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was really shocked by it.
Mm-hmm.
Black Mamba.
Black
Mamba.
Now, isn't the bride Black Mamba?
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I think that her original intention
because
was
listen
to
the
frame...
speech. Like, she didn't deserve to die that way.
Yeah. I think it's more that she just is upset she didn't get to kill her the way she wanted to.
That's what she says.
Meanwhile, Bud gets to.
That's what she says.
Wait, has she said it yet? Oh, no, she goes into the bushwhacking thing here. Anyway.
Yeah. Right.
I love it. Little Discovery Channel
It's great. Yeah. It tells us what we need to know while she's just reading it off. I read this off the internet.
It's totally psychotic, right?
Right. Enforces what a dick she is.
Mm-hmm. Well, also it's saying to him, like, you're dead. You're not making it out of this one.
So she's kind of getting some pleasure out of life.
Of course. She prepared this whole thing.
Like this.
She sat there, watched him open the bag, watched him get bit in the face a bunch of times, smiled, lit a cigarette, and I was reading to him about the poison that's killing him. Like, she's friggin' crazy.
Mm-hmm. Right. She's got some deep, deep issues.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah. It'd be great to see the movie before this when they were actually the deadly Viper assassination squad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I guess that's not the point. We're not supposed to see that film.
Well, and would it even be entertaining?
It wouldn't, because it would
just be all them just doing what they do, you know, just killing people, but for no reason.
Right.
So we wouldn't care.
Doesn't have as much meaning as seeing their relationships as a result of
them falling apart as a squad, as a team.
And it's more mysterious that way, you know? And that's a lot more fun than.
But when you think about it is about, you know, essentially the squad being destroyed. I mean, they were.
Yeah.
The greatest assassination team. Yes. No, there you go. Yeah.
She said the greatest warrior I've ever encountered.
Yeah.
Met her end.
Yeah.
She does care a little bit about stuff like that, but not so much about the. I don't know.
She wanted to be the one to do it.
She cares about the credit.
Yeah. Right. She wanted to be the one to take the greatest warrior down.
Right.
So does she have honor or does she not have any honor?
No, it's ego. It goes back to the ego.
The ego, yep.
Right, well, because she does lack spirit because we know what she does to Pai Mei.
Yeah. If we were going to psychoanalyze her, I think it's more likely she's just upset that she didn't get to kill Beatrix when she could have killed her, and yet Bud did.
Well, why did she want to kill Beatrix so much?
Because she's jealous.
Yeah, she's jealous.
Beatrix Kiddo is everything she wants to be, but never can be.
Right.
And she knows how Bill respects
her. Mean, she is just like seething of jealousy, which is the number one, you know, human instinct to really harm somebody in the first place anyway.
Right.
Above and beyond anything else. That's the number one reason why people do things like bad things to each other is envy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And this
note, the first time they've said her name. Yep. And we are an hour and 14 minutes into the second film.
That's right. And they actually showed the classroom scene where she answered.
Here.
She had little pigtails.
Yeah, just so you all know.
That's right. Beatrix Kiddo.
That is my name.
That is my name.
Yes.
I answer to that.
Just to make sure you
understand. I raise my hand. Yeah. I say here.
Here.
That's great.
Yes.
I love that shot.
Perfect.
That's right. And I love that it's the trailer is too narrow to pull out the sword.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant.
It's brilliant.
It's brilliant.
This is actually.
They're going to have a fist fight.
Yeah.
Pare.
Oh, it just even with a great antenna. Oh, little slow motion.
Wicked Vicious.
I like how the sword is singing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of reminiscent of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, by the way. Yeah. Right. The green Destiny sword.
Yeah.
It's like the sword has life.
Oh.
That was great.
And jump into split screen.
The simultaneous kick.
Well, because they have the same kind of fighting style. You know, they're brought up the same way. They are both the disciples of Bill.
And this goes back to the whole thing
that you said. She's trying to be her the whole time.
Right. This goes back to the whole thing you said. Exactly. She's trying to be her, so they're going to have the same styles.
Well, and they...
Oh. It's all about throwing gross things to do with Bud's fluids in her face in this.
Yeah. And just can't... And actually, it's interesting that she can't get the sword out. It's sort of like... It's almost like the universe is saying, you are not
it's
worthy.
It's not yours.
Yeah, you're not worthy.
You're not worthy of using the sword.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excalibur.
in a way, exactly. She can't pull the sword out. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see that one coming.
Gosh, they tear this trailer apart, but use this so well.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine having to reset this stuff for other takes?
No.
I can't.
Oh, my gosh.
I wouldn't want to be any kind of continuity in a film like this.
No.
Or like any sort of like props.
Swirly
time.
I have the greatest respect for the art department because I would never, ever want to be in there because of everything. Oh, that's right. It empties it out.
It's smart.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. That was...
And she got whatever was in that in her cuts. Yay.
Oh. That's a great...
With the sword in the foreground.
Shot. Yeah. Oh, man. Oh.
And how cheap everything is, too. It makes you realize, I mean, trailers really are like this. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Yep.
Just thrown together.
In the golf bag.
Yeah.
Here it comes.
There you go.
But that's another great thing. I love that shot.
Yeah.
I love her stance.
Me too.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But another great little piece of Bud, you know, he could have sold that sword 100 times over. Mm-hmm.
So
by
he would not sell his sword.
He wouldn't sell his sword. Yeah, exactly. And he has
Even
nothing.
He kept
that
it in
Bill
a golf
gave him
club bag. Yeah.
He was just a sad, twisted little man.
Yep.
But I kind of like him.
Oh. Oh, that's right.
Nah.
Oh, man.
Mm.
Yeah.
I like this little voice, too. This voice that the bride's talking in right now, this is her voice when she's, like, getting down to business to, like, fight someone.
Yeah. And this is when we just basically find out that she killed Pai Mei.
Her real master.
Her real master.
Right. Wow. Oh, I like how they go right into her eye.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's...
Because it's about to come out.
Because it's about to
come out. Yeah.
Exactly. It's like...
Awesome.
If you don't know, you're like... But if you know, it's like, yep. Because we're essentially seeing Beatrix's point of view.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the music is so epic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she's so great covering it.
But
oh, man,
it's almost Western-ish, but it's also like bigger than that.
Yeah.
But she knows exactly what she's going to do.
Yep.
She knows exactly what she's going to
do. Yep.
And Elle has no idea.
No. Mm-hmm. None.
Yep.
She's ready for this like epic sword fight. She's like waiting for her Owen Ishii moment.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And she's like, I ain't going there with you.
I love the push. And you're just waiting for the moment. This is just great. Okay, this is a great film. It is now a great film. It has just achieved greatness.
Here it goes.
Ew.
This blew my mind.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Me
totally
too.
Did.
Because it's not what you don't expect it.
Nope.
But you right. love it.
But you love it.
Exactly. Because it is. Oh, and go into her eyes. Oh!
Ooh.
It's just like.
And she just flips out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, can you imagine? I mean, just trying to reconcile the fact that your eyesight just went away.
Yeah.
And you can't get it back.
Yeah.
I love the way she looks at her.
Yeah.
It's like, jeez.
Oh, man.
Ready?
Gross.
Here we go. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Now her toenails are effed.
Yep.
If you notice that.
Right?
They were all like chipped and broken.
Yep. Oh, and that's right. And the Black Mamba's still there.
Yep.
Yep.
Which she just walked by.
Right by. But, and it didn't even.
No, it's like, oh, I'm not messing with you.
Right? I'm not
it's
messing like, with one of my own kind.
If I bite that one, I might get hurt.
That's right.
I might get hurt. Yeah.
I hate to say it, but I like the blood on the map.
Yeah,
I almost
too.
Thought it was like marks of stuff. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's drippy.
That's, nope. That's just, well, it's just awful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I love her. Leave her.
Yep, leave her.
Just leave her.
That mm-hmm. pathetic human.
Yep.
Yeah.
You killed my master. I'm not even going to kill you.
I think
no.
We do hear her get bit, right? Oh, I love that slam. No, we don't hear her. So
no.
We don't know, but obviously the snake's going to.
It doesn't matter. What is she going to do? She's blind.
Yeah.
What's she going to do now?
Out in the wilderness, not even.
She'll probably do something horrible.
Well, yeah, because.
But it's not going to be anything.
She's not worried.
No.
Kiddo.
But in volume,
Kiddo can handle it.
In volume 3, it would be pretty cool if she somehow came back. And was
well,
like,
I'm sure if there is a volume 3,
I'm
pretty
sure
she'll
gonna,
be in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, because then what happens is Elle
trains the young girl.
The young girl. There you go.
To get her revenge.
Mm.
Mm. Oh, yes.
Neat.
Oh, yes.
Yes. We're all
I love
so
this little
car. Of fingers.
So adorable. Mm.
See, and the thing is that this feels like practically a different film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting how each part, in a way, each part feels like its own little film.
Of each movie.
Well, because we're on to the next stage.
Yeah, actually it is.
But now she's ready to go, okay? She's gotten a haircut.
Look, her hair's all straight. Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She's got new clothes because she's on her final chapter.
Her final chapter.
Yeah.
The last name on the list.
It's a final or last chapter. I think it's at last. Did it?
I don't know.
Oh, let's rewind. No, let's rewind. We'll check it later.
You know what? I never noticed before that he's in a wheelchair.
Oh, you're right.
Just now noticed.
He was a friend of Bill's mother.
Which means
so Bill didn't know his mom, so he wasn't like an orphan.
Or maybe that guy is Bill's dad.
Or maybe he was Bill's mom's pimp.
Yeah, no,
that's what I think they're implying. Yeah,
they just said,
oh, okay.
So, but maybe it being the pimp, he is Bill's father.
Could be.
Maybe.
But that implies
well,
that
he
collects father figures.
Yeah,
so
they just said he collects father figures.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Michael Parks.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, they took the glasses and made it so that the eyes are like wider.
They also gave him some nice, weird liver spot things on his face
and
everything.
It's
good
makeup.
Him a little bit older, yeah.
It's really good makeup.
Totally is.
Yeah.
Anybody know anything about that book and why he just focused on it for a minute?
No, but I'm sure there's something in it.
No doubt.
Sort of like Lost. Oh, this week we're reading this book. It means something.
I'm sure this is much more thought out
and
well constructed than Lost, yeah. I'm sure he didn't just start filming the first frame of this movie and then figure it out, second volume, the end.
No. I don't think so. What's great is what Michael Parks does here, and I hate to say it, but the acting he does with his eyes, how they're so veiled and tired.
Sort of, droopy a little bit. And Yeah.
Because he had a sense that this character is at least 20 years older than his other character.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
See the thing he does with his eyes? And it doesn't feel like a trick. It just feels like, okay, well, that's who this guy
it's
is.
It's great right. character work.
Oh, it's totally. It's great. And he does a good accent.
Oh, perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes a really great actor to be able to have two characters, even though they're two separate movies, but still, two characters where you get extreme close-ups, and you're acting in that extreme close-up, and you pull it off, and you don't even notice that it's the same guy.
I mean, in a way, like, you also
that's impressive.
You also had the thing with Gordon Liu, who played two parts.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Yeah,
I'm,
but
I'm
his other part, there wasn't any speaking.
And he had a mask.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always find this scene to be kind of awkward.
Mm. Why?
I'm not really sure why. I feel like there's always some weird energy happening between them that I can't ever really put my finger on. Or, I don't know. I've always found this scene to be just really uncomfortable.
Oh, it is uncomfortable. I mean, I agree with you. The guy creeps me out.
Yeah, not, I think it's not, meant
not
to
a complete creep out, but it's sort of like he's...
Well, you know, his character is supposed to be a person who basically owns women.
Yeah, he sells women.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
sells women. Yeah. And so he no doubt is thinking about her in that way. Like, you know, he like puts himself in Bill's position. He's talking about, see, we'll just cut her face, you know. And then he like calls over this girl that's a blonde and she looks like she's got her face messed up.
Right.
You know, like, he's probably thinking of Beatrix, like, well, and he says it, you know, you'd be my number one girl. It's like, that's why it's creepy. He clearly is thinking the whole time about how he wants to own her.
Right. It's like he's actually, you know, I want to say, he's like a little bit on heroin.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Maybe
he's strung out.
Pick up on in this sometimes.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Wow. Yeah.
But yeah, it's like he's strung out.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
in this case, he would be, and everyone else would probably likely be strung out. It's interesting that Tarantino chose to essentially be the next step in her, you know, her journey to be talking to this guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like there needs to be this one last challenge, just one last.
But where's the challenge? What's the challenge in this?
She doesn't, like, unleash on him. She keeps composure.
Well, and this archetype of what kind of person he...
Right.
Represents and what part of Bill he represents.
Exactly.
And her ability to not be moved by it.
No,
in
stay
any
on
kind of
course.
Way. Yeah.
Well, right. Because he could have picked anything else, but he picked that and that particular character.
Right.
I mean, there was no physical violence. There was no threat of violence.
He is a part of Bill, of what kind of man Bill is.
Exactly. It reveals
his
Bill's character.
And it's right before she's about to go there and be like, yep, this is who you are.
Right.
You're just a newer version of this guy.
Yeah.
Wow. She's got her sword and her gun.
In a skirt.
Mm-hmm.
Get it.
That's classy.
I think if I were her, I would have done something with the sword. Like, I would have at least put it somewhere else where he wasn't expecting it to be, just in case he got the drop on me somehow and came around.
It's the drop that she never expected.
Bang, bang, mommy.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah.
Because first time...
I didn't see this coming either.
And the little girl knows who her mother is.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because she's seen pictures. Oh, that's very funny.
Because he had his little plan that she was going to come out of the coma and he was just going to control everybody.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Oh, that little girl is really cute.
Really cute. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he's actually really, really cute with her.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think he loves kids. I mean, we saw him with 8 of them.
Yes.
I was thinking about that, and I didn't know how to say it.
Bullseye, Taylor.
That was brilliant.
Bullseye.
That was brilliant.
Yeah.
I think that comment, though, was on Volume 1, right? Do we want to clue in people listening to Volume 2?
Oh, yeah. Listen, well, if you're listening to Volume 2, you should listen to Volume 1 first. Yeah.
That's
stop
the clue.
Now
in.
And go
there you go.
If you want to know what that means,
you have been nice. Gripped go with anticipation.
Last week's podcast. Oh, wow. They're using the snap zooms.
Mm hmm. But they're not messy snap zooms like those other ones.
They're a little cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
She fell very well with that sword cleanly underneath
her. I was thinking about that.
Yes.
Probably took a couple of tries, huh?
Oh, wow. And you notice that the same shot as when she got shot, you know, the same angle as when she got shot at the beginning?
Yeah.
And now it's life.
Mm. Nice observation, sir.
And the whole thing is, you know, you totally feel what she's feeling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And it's taken basically 2 movies to get here.
And from this moment on is when she enters the third.
Yeah.
Her.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because now she truly is a mother.
And she has something to live for.
Exactly. And she finds her humanity again, in a sense.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And someplace to, like, put all of her willpower. And
because if she was just, after she revenged everybody, if she didn't have her kid, she'd kind of just be an empty shell, wouldn't she? Mm-hmm.
But that's what Bill is counting on. He's counting on her being human so that he can basically...
manipulate it?
Yeah.
And have her again.
Yeah. Yep.
The thing he doesn't count on is that she knows that Bill is part of, I guess, want to call it the cancer of her previous life.
Right.
But it takes a little while to get there.
Aww.
Oh, man. He is totally... This is the most warped family film ever.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know this was a family film.
It's a family film now. It's exactly what... this is now the warped family film. If you think of it as each chapter is a different movie, that's what this movie is.
Daddy shot Mommy in the head to bring us all closer together.
Everyone can relate.
Yes.
But look how it's lit. Look how everything's lit.
And
look
he's
how it's
making a sandwich.
And the colors.
Look how it's set design. I mean, this could totally
be
out of
a family
film. Yeah. Absolutely.
They're eating plain white bread.
White bread.
Bimbo
exactly.
bread, by
Bimbo
the way.
Bimbo bread.
And that thing in the background vase looks like a Christmas tree.
It looks like a horse.
No, the other one.
I was looking at the thing on the wall.
And the camera's on Beatrix.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you were a bad daddy.
Yep.
Yes, you were.
A really bad daddy.
Really bad daddy.
Taylor, you sound like you've been waiting to say that to somebody.
Been practicing.
I'm just saying.
But I love the things that bring you out of it, though. Like, who needs a knife that big and sharp to cut up that little sandwich? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, it's a giant butcher knife.
And I like how he's basically cutting off all the crusts.
Right? And he even puts the mayonnaise on the sandwich with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's great.
Oh, yeah.
It's a very killer thing to do. This is I love this whole interaction about the fish and everything.
Yeah.
Because she's just a little kid doing the acting thing, right? But the way they do it, she totally seems like she's, in a little way, cold-blooded. She just killed her own pet fish and was just like, interesting.
Yep.
And actually, when you talk about that, I think is part of what becomes Beatrix's decision that she does have to kill Bill.
Right.
No, because she sees that all he's going to do is turn
her into a killer.
Her into
right?
a killer. And yeah. that is what she does yep. not want yep. for her daughter.
And that was
which,
the whole point.
Which she didn't, which who knows beginning. If she was thinking, well, I'm sure she was thinking of that before when she was trying to redo her life. But now definitely she does not want to have that. She already sees that she's already on her way and she has to stop there. So
right.
Just no
and
way
she just
continue.
Came from the pimp's place, you know?
Yeah.
She knows that that's yeah. all big part of Bill's life and who he is.
And all, but also, actually, now that you, now we talk about the pimp's place, it makes me realize it's about how Bill treats women and how, because Bill,
well, yeah.
Bill treats women the way he learned from that
oh, yeah.
guy.
Well, yeah.
That women are
owned.
Really to be owned, not even just objects, to be owned.
Well, all his assassins are women except for his brother.
Right. Yeah.
You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And even says his brother, the only man I ever loved.
Exactly.
Too. Yeah. I mean, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
That little girl is ridiculously cute.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, but that's the point.
Even
she
when
has
she's talking about killing her pets.
Right.
So adorable.
See, and the whole time, just the way he's handling the knife,
yeah.
there's always
yep.
the sense of menace, which is mm-hmm. part and parcel mm-hmm. with what Tarantino brings to it, mm-hmm. which he just plays with so excellently. You just don't know when it's going to come.
Mm-hmm. Her room's really cute, too.
Yeah, it's a great room.
That's the point. It is a great room. It's a great family film room. But though it is set in the Southwest, I like the Southwestern motif just that's carried mm-hmm. through the whole thing, which reminds you that this is, in a way, a Western.
It's interesting that this is the first time that he's telling her, the little girl, that he shot her. That
yeah.
he shot her mom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm. And she just...
What happened?
Yeah,
I love that.
And he's doing this in a very passive-aggressive way.
Because I don't, you know, obviously she doesn't understand. It's all fantasy. It's just like when they shot each other out in the courtyard.
Yeah,
and
she doesn't
pretending,
know what that means.
You know,
like
what
all,
happened?
It's
What's
like
the
all
story?
Right. She's
yeah.
not
it
old enough
stories.
To really put it together in a realistic sense.
Because she's got a metal plate in her head. That's why it doesn't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows, I mean, he knows the whole situation. He knows what's going to come next. See, this goes back to the beginning with Vernita. The whole thing with keeping the child out of it and trying to make everything normal for the child.
Right.
Mm-hmm. No matter how bad it is.
Because that is her father. You know?
Yeah.
She's going to take her yeah. little girl's father away from her, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And she clearly loves him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's who's raised her
but
thus far.
But she knows what her father will do.
Exactly.
To her.
Maybe that's sort of his way of, I don't know, in a small way, feeling better about himself or something. Like he's telling the truth to the little girl from his
right,
own mouth.
Right, right,
you
oh,
know?
Yeah.
So maybe
well,
he does feel something for the little girl. Maybe he's not completely devoid of
Oh, I think he loves
feeling,
her.
You know?
I think that
oh, he totally loves
he
her.
Doesn't realize how cold he really is. I
yeah.
think that he thinks he's like some freaking god. And I think that he thinks that every action he makes is the right action. And like, and not right as in... correct but just and fair because he made it yeah. he made that decision. I mean he's obviously twisted and psychotic.
Oh yeah.
In that kind of way though, you know, in the kind of way that like, you know, in ancient Egypt the pharaoh, you know, was
considered himself to be a deity.
Well yeah,
actually.
He was God on earth.
Right.
You know, it's
yeah.
that kind of
right.
thing. You know, it's that kind right. of mindset he has.
Well for yeah, for who he is and for his world, he thinks he's in other words, he lives in his world and he knows his world is in a certain way.
Right.
So he's doing everything he believes is absolutely right within
yeah.
that world.
Yeah.
yeah.
And any decision he makes, he believes it's the right decision because he made it.
I also think right. he thinks you know. He's empowering women. You know what I mean?
Ooh,
yeah.
That's interesting.
I
yeah.
think he does. I think that's how he justifies it in his head. Like he's empowering women, making them into these
assassins.
Yeah. But he's ultimately in control of them. He's still playing the godlike.
But I have
well,
to wonder.
Well,
like,
well, then that's the question: can these women be empowered, so to speak, assassins without someone like that?
But
well, she's proving that.
Everybody.
Well, and oh, Renee, she was like that. She did that on
yeah,
her own.
She did that.
All
her.
Of them except L walked away.
Walked away
with no apparently consequences from Bill. Like,
although
the team,
I'm sure that they
The team already,
there was some sort of arrangement to that too.
Well, yeah, but I mean, point being that the team was already dissolved before.
Right.
Well, maybe
Beatrix started going around killing everybody. You know, so, and he doesn't have a team now, or else they might show up and make sure things went his way. You know, I mean, I find that interesting. So maybe, I don't know, that's a whole other angle to explore.
Yeah.
Like maybe his desire to control and have people around him that admired him or whatever was replaced with the daughter, maybe. I don't know.
Well, I mean, but maybe it was the whole thing where essentially shooting Beatrix is what split up the gang.
Yeah, that very well.
Or her initial leaving was what started it.
Yeah.
You know?
And then that finished that, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I get the impression that he only, he didn't train Oren or, what's the Vivica's character?
Vernita.
Yeah, Vernita. Copperhead. I get the impression that he didn't train either of them. They were just recruited to be on his squad.
Yeah. Good point.
Whereas she and Elle and obviously the brother were all trained by Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But I don't think Bud ever went to Pai Mei, though.
I don't think so.
No.
So now this is the showdown.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I really love, like, later, I'm just going to say it now so we can see it when it happens, but the gun that Bill uses is a single-action revolver that's actually a old Western style of action, and it's chambered in .45 Colt. I noticed that from the back of the cartridges that they showed in that close-up when she woke up.
Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
Which is a pretty standard for that, but it's basically as big as a .44 Magnum, maybe a little bit more powerful.
Wow.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's slightly, you know, 0.44 inches, and then that one's 0.45, 45 caliber. So it's a big gun, but it's also very interesting because you have to manually pull back the hammer for each time you want to fire. It's not even like a modern revolver where you can just pull the trigger.
Right.
It's a very cowboy gun.
Yeah.
And here he's watching a cowboy film.
Yeah.
And he's got his Western, you know, jacket on and everything.
Yep.
Yet no boots. He's barefoot. More like a martial arts guy, Mike.
Right. Well, it's the
fusion.
It's the mash of the genres.
I love the quick draw. He does a quick draw with this, and it's exactly like a cowboy. You know, he's got the cowboy gun, and he does a quick draw to keep her from getting to the sword.
Yeah, because that was an obvious that she's looking at the sword.
Right.
Wow.
Yowza.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like a little cannon.
Mm-hmm.
It
basically
does.
Is.
So hilarious.
I love when people laugh in these two movies.
Oh, yeah.
They're just, they're the best laughs.
See, it's interesting. I like it when he does, I mean, I can appreciate when he does that, but like in Boogie Nights, when the guy is, you know, shooting and stuff and throwing the firecrackers, I just find it completely annoying. But here this
works.
Oh,
I find that so tense.
Oh, I mean, it was tense, but I just want to kind of scream, just like, stop it, just stop it.
But that's the point.
God, she's pissed. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah.
And it's this kind of look on her face, like, I'm just done. I'm fed up.
Yeah, I'm going to kill you.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're
like,
dead.
Stop spinning your yarns. I'm not listening.
But he's so certain of himself. He's so like,
I am
the master.
And
he is.
He's approaching this from the perspective like he was wronged and he wants to know and he should know. So he's just going to get the truth any way he can.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a throwback to the movie Gotcha, by the way. Remember they had those paintball guns that were like that? Did you guys ever see that movie?
Uh-uh.
A long time ago. What is it?
It's basically an air-powered.
No. I mean, what's in the dart?
Truth serum. He's about to explode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But But see, and this goes back again with his whole ego and how he thinks he's like some sort of God and he thinks he's all justified. He seeks the truth. You know, I mean, he sees himself as that kind of person who does that. It's just ridiculous.
And it's like before he overreacted and that's how he looks at you. He's like, oh, I overreacted earlier, but now I really want to know. Okay, now we can talk, but it's going to be on my terms. You know, I'm just going to shoot you up with some truth serum.
And
so
I'm
going to
shoot you
up with
truth serum because I am the reliable.
Right.
You're the liar.
Yeah. And you're the liar. Right. You know, I'm the one
you
who judges what evidence is heard here today. You know, it's just.
Right.
I'm trying to remember. Do we ever see the part where Pai Mei teaches her how to do the 5 points?
No.
That's in deleted scenes.
Really?
Yeah, that was deleted. I can't see it. Because for some reason I've seen it.
I like that they didn't show it. Because if they had, then it wouldn't be as much of a cool surprise.
Right, yeah.
Right.
No.
Because she does tell him that he does, he did teach it to her. Yeah. All right.
Because
he has that realization on his face.
That's right.
He goes, wow, he taught you that.
Yeah.
I love this whole discussion of superheroes. I hadn't even thought about it this way until I saw this movie, but it's so true. However, I can think of one guy who also is what he is. Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, you're right. Red Tornado.
But this is the kind. I mean, I've heard people discuss this before this movie came out. This whole whole Superman thing. This has come up in conversations before. I think this is kind of like a long discussed, you know, idea of how his costume is his real self.
Right. Well, I'm sure Quentin has had many discussions like this.
No doubt.
So. I mean, this is
I'm trying to remember. I think there was
Because even what you're just saying now about like Martian Manhunter, Red Tornado, they just are what they are. He's still not saying
they
just are
what
they are.
Right.
That's
true.
Right.
It's not his costume is his regular self.
I think there was a movie called Sleep With Me. Eric Stoltz was in it. Quentin Tarantino showed up and actually there's a whole thing that I think Roger Avery came up and that Quentin Tarantino or they both came up with that story and I think he does do a riff on that in that film, literally for like 3-4 minutes.
Yeah.
And then he disappears from the film. But, otherwise the film's not that all that memorable.
It's just one of those things that gets brought up a lot. I mean, it's even like, you know, like the Batman thing gets brought, you know, like that, because Batman and other people, I mean, that his costume is his true self. You know, if you want to argue, like, when he puts on a mask so he can be himself. They actually talk about it in Batman Returns at the party where he and Selina Kyle are talking about putting on masks and being their real selves.
Well, that could be about for basically any superhero.
Right.
That they become their true self so they can...
Which one
you
is
put
the
on
true
the mask
self.
To become your true self.
Right.
Right, whereas...
But Bruce Wayne, he's kind of... He's some of himself as the you know, billionaire playboy, and he's some of himself as Batman. I don't think either one truly represents him entirely.
I don't know. I would argue to say that the playboy Bruce Wayne isn't him at all.
No, because he plays that up on purpose.
Yeah. Right. I think.
Because he was never really comfortable with his wealth and things like that after his parents died.
Right.
Right. Mm.
But he does do the billionaire tycoon thing, though, like kind of on the sidelines in the movies with Lucius. Remember, he already had done his research and he was talking to him about different business deals.
But it's never a crucial part. I just want to make a comment. The stuff that splattered on her
is now dried.
Yeah.
Well, the whole point is that because they did that, they would have had to put that on for all the days that they did this scene.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I love this part, though, where she's like really calling him on all this bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
She's like, okay, I just sat here with this truth serum in me and let you spin your little tails of how awesome and how smart you think you are.
And how just you think you are.
Right.
You tried to kill me and my baby.
Yep.
Your baby.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Argue your way out of that.
Right.
And she's trying so hard to like hold her shit together.
Right.
And not just be like the woman, you know,
right.
who's he's going to put logic on her and she's going to get emotional and cry.
Yeah, be irrational.
So then, then men can just do whatever they want. They can dismiss anything you say because you cried.
Mm.
It's sad, but it's a stereotype of life. It's true.
And it's very handy.
Sad but true.
Oh, wait. Did I say that out loud?
So you can never cry.
Yes, you did.
I don't dismiss out of hand just from that. I do make people cry occasionally.
Me too.
I know I'm insufferable.
Oh, wow.
Awesome. Right here.
Wow. I try to make a practice of not making people cry.
I just like to make myself cry.
Sometimes it's necessary. Sarah.
I like to make other people cry.
Yeah, for the greater good.
Oh, great.
Fine. And then I laugh while they're crying.
Just so like when he shot her with the dart gun?
Yeah.
You're my evil nemesis now, Taylor.
No, shot her with that.
You're a mean person, Taylor.
Very much
I like this scene a lot.
Yeah, this scene is really...
I do love this scene.
However, it does... I feel like it does break down when, you know, these two train killers are facing off and the one actually cares that she might be pregnant. I mean, that just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. They don't know each other, you know?
I just think it's one of those moments where you just get drawn out of what you do and you realize things are about other things, you know? And I think they're both kind of like experiencing that, like this, oh, we just run around shooting people, but life actually is about other shit.
Right. Mm. Well, yeah.
There's something bigger.
But that's the whole thing.
Right.
Because this is about life. It's not about death.
It's true.
I mean,
and it does go along with the theme of protecting kids and keeping the kids right out of it.
And I think, and maybe again, you know, maybe it's just like a womanly type of thing, you know? Maybe if it wasn't two women assassins, the other one wouldn't. I would argue to say that if it was a man assassin up against her, he would have killed her or would have taken advantage of the fact that she was, you know, put out by this information. But I think there is this like innate maternal instinct in any kind of a woman.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
That was a nice move.
Huh? Yeah.
That's you, mean person. I'd forgotten about this scene. This scene is actually really pretty good.
I love the scene.
Who sent Karen?
No, we don't know.
Oh, just someone.
Oh, she said her name when she walked up and identified herself as a hospitality manager. Didn't she?
Oh, Karen. No, but they're saying who sent her.
Oh.
Wow, she's the deadliest woman in the world. That's great.
Yep.
And I believe her when she says that.
Me too.
Hard to argue when she goes and, like, you know, slices up a whole freaking Yakuza clan.
But even if I haven't seen that, I would have believed from the way she right. says it.
Right.
She's right, just like, I've got to look down.
She should have been dead right there.
That's right. What's that sticking out of the gun?
It's the knife, dude. It's right. The knife that she threw.
This really is a great scene.
It's a great scene.
Yeah.
Reads the box. It's definitely amusing. I still think the logic breaks down, but I think it's
no.
I don't.
I think the logic is sound. Because I think if it had been, you know, her and a guy, it wouldn't have made a difference.
Yeah.
No.
The guy would already be dead, actually.
Yeah.
Well. I'm just thinking, like, if you have the mindset of being an assassin and you do this for pay,
right,
and you have to go into dangerous situations all the time and you deal with people all the time and you're used to killing,
mm-hmm,
that it really, like, at some point you develop a disconnect with humanity,
but this is,
and you're not gonna care. Like, if she was sent to kill the son, like, what's gonna happen to her now that she went in and tried and decided not to kill her.
She'll make something.
It's her life.
She'll make something out.
Yeah, she'll just fucking make something out. I'm not worried about her.
The point is that it's making is that motherhood, life trumps death.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in that moment, she realized that.
That there was something bigger going on.
There was something bigger.
And that she probably wasn't going to be able to kill her because she was so set in, because she was now pregnant.
She doesn't want to kill anymore.
Well, no, but like the other girl, like when she says she's the deadliest woman in the world, if I was the other chick, I'd be scared. I'd be like, for sure. And whether I'm not going to kill you right now, you're probably going to end up killing me is the thought I would have.
Yeah.
So
getting
out of there is beneficial to her.
It's like lose-lose. Exactly. She's giving them her chance to get out of there.
Yeah. Well, by that time, she would have already shot her because they had that standoff for a second.
Right.
So.
Yep. You see, that's what she says.
Yep.
He'd claim her.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and he makes not your decision to make. Wow.
You know what, though? In a way, he's right.
Yeah, he is.
Because
but she
is
even admits. She goes, yes. She's like, but it was the decision I had to make.
Right.
You know, it was because it was the right decision.
Right. Exactly. Because she wanted her to be born. Yeah, she didn't want her living this life.
No.
Clearly, they have irreconcilable differences.
Yep.
Well, because he doesn't. He's not seeing. In other words, if he saw it as she shouldn't have come into this world, but he doesn't see that. He sees it as, once again, it goes back to the whole way. Because if it had been a boy, I think it would have been a little different. But because it was a girl, he sees the girl as someone to subjugate, basically, in the way he subjugated all the other women.
Yep. Yeah.
In the way that he learned.
Mm. And she knew that that was going to happen.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Just like she, in a way, she felt a little bit subjugated.
But she knew when she was pregnant, she didn't know if it was a boy or a girl. She knew she was pregnant, and she knew in that moment, in that hotel, that's when she was getting out.
Okay.
Yep.
It meant nothing to her, the gender of that baby.
Well, okay, you're absolutely, you know what? You're right. Whether it was a girl or a boy.
Right, that was her child, and that child was not going to grow up like that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we were
I don't think she sees gender like he does.
No.
No, we were extrapolating into the whole controlling women thing.
Right.
I mean, it seems logical, but it really wasn't stated in the film either.
Yeah.
Right.
But, I mean, it stands to reason that he would subjugate anybody.
But he would subjugate.
Just like he did with his brother.
He would subjugate his son, just like he subjugated his brother. Yeah. Exactly. So it could have been a boy, too. She didn't want that for any child.
Mm-hmm. You notice he polished off that whole bottle pretty much?
Yes.
In the course of their conversation.
And also, the thing is, the way I look at it is that basically it's maternal instinct that kicks in on her part. It's not, you know, it's knowledge that comes to her. It's like in that moment, she could never have conceived of it until that moment. She goes like, oh my God, yeah, can't happen.
I wonder if it's his way, too, of saying sorry and sort of dropping his guard that he's drinking so much before they're clearly going to have some kind of altercation, or he's making himself very vulnerable to her.
I just think he doesn't feel threatened in any kind of way.
No.
Because he's that egotistic?
Yeah.
He's the master.
And I think because he's apologizing, he feels like he's going to get what he wants.
Mm.
Yeah, like it'll all just go away after they hash it out and they'll be...
Right, because she really loves me, and whatever I do, it's just going to be what I do. And I spared her life. I was going to kill her, but then I didn't, and I raised our baby.
I do like that.
Only
that
once
he
I
says,
knew she
though,
was mine.
I like how he says, you don't break the heart of a murdering bastard, because there are consequences.
Truth. Vice versa.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Vice versa on that.
Yep. If you're going to shoot the deadliest woman in the world in the head, you'd better make sure she's dead.
Double
because
tap.
There are consequences. See,
well,
you know.
Well, it's a thing, but he didn't kill her before. He could have killed her right there, and he didn't. Because he still thinks...
He actually felt... But he said before, like, he didn't know how it would make him feel, so he stopped.
Well,
or
but
at least
also,
didn't shoot her again.
She's his masterpiece in a way.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
true.
You know?
That's true.
Which goes back to his pride and his ego and
look
everything.
Look at what she's done.
Yep.
Yeah. And there we go.
Nice. I love that little save on the back.
Yeah.
When the chair tips.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, bingo. And it's done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that is how we do it.
I love that music.
And the
it's
thing
like,
is,
it's from a Western from like the 20s.
and the
That's
thing
what it sounded like.
Do you think she even planned it or it just came instinctively? Oh, there we go.
I think she knew she would use it. Yeah. If you're going to use it on anybody.
It's Bill.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
When else would you ever use it?
And you have to be really close and you have to have a really clear shot at their chest.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he wasn't on his feet. I mean, it just makes sense.
And she's so sad, but she knew she had to do it.
Mm-hmm. I think if I were her, I would have been trying to think of the quickest way to kill him because he's theoretically the deadliest opponent.
But it's like we were talking about when we did volume one. It's the more skilled the opponent, the more brief the battle.
Yeah, exactly.
True.
This was very, very brief.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love, it's kind of funny to me, like, it's always good to know the limitations of your actors when you're directing something. And I love it that David Carradine barely had to do any fighting at all.
Yeah.
You know,
it was all about his persona. It was all about talking him up and just
right.
like making him seem like
and knowing
this
what he
guy.
Had done.
Yeah. He comes down from fighting with Pai Mei, you know, and he's just got a little bit of thing on his forehead. And he does one quick draw and he does a few moves with the sword and that's it. That's right. all the fighting in the movie. But it's still effective. You never really doubt that he was this super killer.
Right.
Guy.
I never got that he fought with Pai Mei.
Oh, really?
Oh.
No.
What, you think he fell and got the bump on his head?
I don't know. It just didn't
He tripped on the way down?
Yeah.
I don't know. He looked disheveled or something. It just didn't occur to me. Oh, they fought. Okay. Yeah.
Well, yeah. He probably would have been like, so, how's your skill lately?
Yeah.
Now, it's cool that the way she just stroked his hand, because that was the first thing we saw of him. Well, we saw his boots, but we saw his hand. Remember at the beginning in Black and White?
Yeah, it's true.
And he's going to take his
But
life.
I like it. Yeah, honor. You know, she's like, I'll sit here with you.
Yeah.
If you want to walk out of this world like a man.
Mm-hmm.
Which he does.
Yep. Because in his sick, twisted mind, he really does have some sort of code.
Yeah.
Well, and it's a good death.
Right.
Yeah.
How many people get to die from a 5-point palm exploding heart
right,
technique?
Right, exactly.
You know?
I mean, if I was choosing ways, that'd be at the top of the list. Just for coolness.
His jacket is killer. It's amazing.
Oh, he went 6 steps. Boom. It wasn't 5. It was 6.
What?
It was 6 steps.
No, I don't think so.
Yes, I counted.
So did I.
I counted 6.
He started to take a 6th step, but then it failed.
And then
he fell. He didn't get to take 6 steps.
So. All right.
I'll give you 5 1/4.
Nah.
She's got big hands.
She does. I've been noticing.
Do you ever see that movie?
Tom
Robbins book or Tim?
Yeah.
Tom Robbins. Tim Robbins.
Do cowgirls.
Even cowgirls get the blues. Yeah, she got a giant thumb.
It was supposed to be a pretty bad film,
I didn't see that movie.
It's really awful, but it's kind of so bad it's good.
That was Gus Van Sant, right?
Maybe.
I think so.
Was it a bad movie? It was probably Gus Van Sant.
Hey, he's done some good films.
I like Milk.
I like Milk.
I didn't see Milk.
I love it how she goes in, they shoot each other, he shoots at her. They have like this sword fight, and then
the little
she
girl
just
never gets
up. He just gets the valet to come. You know, she gets the valet to come bring her car.
Yep,
no big deal.
They don't care.
And I love the breakdown she has right here. The release.
Heckle and Jekyll.
Finally.
Yeah. Again, she's human.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the end of her journey.
Yeah, she can finally release and relax.
Right.
And she's going to feed her daughter name brand cereal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not some bimbo bread.
Bimbo bread. Or
with the crust cut off.
Kapow. Was it called Kapow or Whammo?
Kaboom.
I think it was
Kaboom. Kaboom. There we go. It's called Kaboom cereal.
Yeah, and she's like hugging a stuffed animal.
It's okay, kiddo. Like,
she doesn't want to break down in front of her daughter.
Well, no. Exactly.
God, she wouldn't break down in front of anybody, though.
No.
I mean, she could be alone in this room and she'd still be locked in the bathroom. Just on the chance that someone else walks into the main room and seeing her cry.
Right.
Well, part of that's got to be happiness, too, because
she
came
she was
through
laughing.
All of that death and destruction
and
found that her daughter was alive.
Yeah, until last night.
Right.
She thought her daughter was dead.
Right. Yeah.
That's what she was doing all of this for.
Mm-hmm. So the world has been made right.
Mission accomplished.
Except for Vernita's daughter.
Yeah.
Well, it's a loose end.
Mm-hmm. And the L didn't really, we didn't see her die.
Well, that's, yeah, we don't know what happened to L, though.
But I love that, though. I love it. She wouldn't even kill her.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
She's just like.
She's not a threat.
You don't deserve.
You're not a threat.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can leave you alive because you're not a threat.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You have and I'm going to leave you to suffer. I'm not going to just,
The lioness has rejoined her cub and all is right. In the See, what I say? All is right with the world. Yay.
Yeah.
Cup ahead.
Oh, there we go.
Ambrosia. That's Kelly. Cool. McGraw.
Earl McGraw.
Oh, I love when movies end like
James
this.
Park.
Me too.
Must be his son. Who knows?
Like Dr. Phil.
Kenji.
You know Phil, Phil's last name is McGraw? Did you know that?
Bald guy.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, so this, hang on. This is the, these are the credits for everybody in both films.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
I like this music too.
Me too.
Yeah. So, wow. I think these are all likely
Tejano.
Big Japanese stars of yesteryear.
Most likely.
Chili Brown. Charlie Brown.
Sakichi Sato. There we go.
Boba.
Oh, man.
That's great. They gave Jerry the thing with the blood coming out of her mouth.
It's a crazy 88s. They were too cool.
Yeah, they were too cool.
By the way, did you notice that
she was awesome. She was great. Chiaki.
Computer add some of their faces in there? I noticed there are a couple of them
when
the big group came in.
She in
Battle Royale. That's where she.
I think didn't she? Wasn't she in Memoirs of a Geisha after this movie came out? Like, didn't they give her like a good spot in that?
Really?
I'm just making that up.
What?
I think
they just cast all the Chinese. Everyone was Chinese in that film.
Oh, that's funny.
Awful.
No, Ken Watanabe is not Chinese.
Okay, yeah, they were all. I haven't seen it. They were all Chinese.
He was Japanese. There we go. Gordon Liu.
But the star was.
Yeah, Zhang Ziyi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
that girl was one of the other geishas.
And then also Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah, Michelle Yeoh.
Michelle Yeoh. Really.
And Gong Li.
Yeah, exactly.
And Gong Li. Yeah.
All Chinese.
Gong Li's beautiful.
Oh, she's so beautiful.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Sophie Fatale.
Reverend Harmony.
Oh, Jeannie Epper. I thought she was someone. Okay. Shayna Stein.
Wait, Jeannie Epper.
Chris Nelson.
Isn't she might be the other stunt woman I was talking about.
Oh, maybe. You know what? It's likely that they were all stunt women on this. That would make sense.
Like, she might have been the one who ended up taking Zoe to the audition.
Okay.
Because I thought she looked familiar, too, and now her name sounds familiar. I'm going to have to look up that documentary when we're done.
Yeah.
That's interesting. He was Sidewinder, and he's a bushwhacker. I'll drive.
Yeah, yeah.
California Mountain Snake. Ugh.
It is that kind of like that kind of like
her name is
Bill. Bill is dead.
Bill is dead. He's still dead.
He's snake charmer.
He's still dead.
That's interesting.
I don't think they ever said what his code name was in the film, did they?
Yeah, I think they did.
Snake Charmer.
When they were talking
about, I don't know if they mentioned Snake Charmer.
Oh, there's Uma Thurman last.
And rightfully slow, so.
Yep. Yay, mommy.
But, yeah, going back to that whole thing we were talking about earlier with the pimp and that whole kind of like, that you pointed out, Serge, that maybe it was because he was slightly like under some sort of like drug state.
Yeah.
I think maybe that is why I always find that so uncomfortable. Now, I've been thinking about it ever since you said that. And I do find that to be really uncomfortable in movies or when you're talking to people in real life. I mean, I occasionally you even meet people who have that sort of disposition about them and they're not on any kind of drugs. And right. I always find that really weird. It's like they're not quite here with you.
Yeah.
Right.
So...
Yeah, I'll go with strung out on heroin. If not, then he just acts like he's strung out on heroin.
Right, which is equally just as weird.
But I, this is cool.
Yeah.
Just I love it.
Doing another end credit sequence. Mm-hmm. How many end credit sequences are there?
Another font.
Another font.
Yeah.
Cross out each name. After
you're
that.
Gone.
Great.
Yeah. We are getting like another set of end credits. Wow.
Why not? Because it's the end credit for two movies.
question mark. Yeah, we don't know.
Question mark.
Well, actually, you know what it is? The previous credits were credits done in the style of the first film. These are the credits done in the style of the second film.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, probably what they did is they did two sets of credits, and it's like, okay, we're just going to put them both in.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
And it's interesting that you chose this particular sequence right here to show behind it because it's her driving to get Bill. not after.
Yeah. Well, you know, and this is like, yeah, it's definitely the style of films from the 30s and, well, the 40s. Because usually you saw these titles at the front of a film. The whole thing of having titles at the end of a film is something that started only like late 70s with Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Before that, all the titles were always front-loaded, and the film would end. You'd have like, see you next time. You know, here are the actors, and we go.
Gaffer.
Yeah.
Why do I know that name? Yuen Po Ping.
Are you kidding me? He did the choreography for Crouching Tiger. He did the choreography for The Matrix. That's where he came.
That's why
his
I know
claim
his
to fame
okay.
was. That's oh, it was Robert Richardson. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That was the whole thing. Actually, I think he just directed a film, a kung fu film of some sort.
The Weinsteins.
The Weinsteins, yeah.
I just shook my head, by the way. Yeah. Well, people who listen.
I heard you shake your head.
That was the sound of a head shake. Yeah.
Heidi's still shaking your head. It's still going. It's not going to stop. Actually, we haven't seen his credit, and now we see the director directing writing credit for the first time. Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, there's a...
Over the face of his muse.
That's right.
And a little wink.
It's surprising that nothing has happened between them. You
oh,
know?
Like personal life?
Yeah, if this was like 60 years ago, like Golden Hollywood time, like they would have had some like tumultuous affair.
Mm. I don't know.
She's married to like some big banker or something like that.
Sometimes people work together well and they're just not attracted in that way.
Yeah, I feel like they're just really good buddies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a mutual respect there.
Yeah, of course. But she for sure is his muse.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And now we have some more Spanish music over the credits. So anyway, while we watch the credits continue. Oh, Greg Nicotero again, makeup.
I think this is French music.
I feel.
No, that's Spanish. I know French. That's
not
French.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah. It just sounded like a song I knew for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I think it might be Creole.
That's not Creole. It's Spanish.
Sound,
I don't know. This,
are you sure it's Spanish?
I totally. It doesn't sound like Spanish. I know my French, and this is Spanish. Hmm. It's totally. And it's not Italian either. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe she's just got a real interesting, like, maybe she's doing a very stylized way or something. Now, that's a different language. That's Japanese.
You're right.
That's what it is.
That's what I was going to say.
I knew this
was
Spanish.
It wasn't
like
Spanish.
Really it's listening to it. Like, what is going on? Mm-hmm.
It's a Japanese song in the style of a Spanish song.
Yeah.
That's what. Maybe it's that person's Japanese and they were singing in Spanish with a Japanese accent.
But it could also be, in all fairness, it could be Korean or Chinese as well. We're not really sure.
I can tell Chinese from Japanese, actually.
It's ambiguous.
I can tell writing.
Yeah.
That's right.
Actually, like, Korean is really easy
to spot.
Yeah,
Korean and Thai.
Writing is. Yeah.
Korean, Thai are really easy. Well, actually, now that I know them all, it's very easy to tell the difference between Chinese and Japanese.
You know all of them?
I mean, I don't know how to read. I don't know what they say.
But you can tell the difference.
But I can tell the difference between any symbol-based Asian language.
Even Vietnamese?
Oh, I could pick that out for sure.
The hardest one is discerning Japanese from the very basic form of Chinese because they have like three different characters. I think it's the kanji in
Japanese.
Japanese is like resembles one of the types of Chinese.
Yeah, like the
that's harder.
Yeah,
it's
like not like the because there's like the really elaborate symbols, and then there's it has like another name.
Yeah, it's the basic stuff
for like the you know, it's the difference between like printing and cursive.
Right,
it's like that kind of thing.
All right.
These credits
are going to go on forever. So
Taylor was getting bored.
Some final any final thoughts? Do we like this?
It's all foreign to me.
It's right. It's all great to me.
All them foreigners.
How does this?
Them they're here foreigners.
Do we want to compare Kill Bill 1 to 2, or are they just two different films?
They're two different films.
They're two different sections of the same story. It's too hard to. I don't know.
Okay.
To me, it's like the Iliad and the Odyssey. Can't really, can't really compare.
Okay. No. All right.
Good analogy.
Thank you.
But if you were going to sit down and watch one of these, which one would you watch? Volume 1 or Volume 2?
Volume 1.
Volume 1. But it's because it's standalone.
You know what, though? I'm thinking about it, and just as far as like completeness of the plot and everything and backstory, I think you could watch two and stand alone without one and know what was going on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you could.
Yeah, volume one definitely is a lot more action-packed. Volume two is much more human.
Yeah.
But it's got some killer fight scenes.
Yeah, it does. I don't know. They're both, they're equally as good.
I know,
because
she gets buried alive in this one.
Yeah, they're right. Equally as good.
Mm. Yeah.
I wouldn't say one's better than the other.
I couldn't pick. It depends.
Because
it's one movie.
It is technically one movie.
It's like saying, do you like the first half of the film or the second half of the film?
Yeah, exactly.
I like the whole movie.
Some people like different parts of films.
I think you're right. The volume one does probably stand on its own much better than just volume two, and that's why it feels like that, because volume two is essentially the second half of the film.
Volume one.
And I do think the volume one is much more tight and entertaining.
Right.
Sure.
It's much more of a ride.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, and it doesn't. It has fewer protracted dialogue scenes,
mm-hmm.
And the dialogue scenes are very good. I'm not trying to bash them at all, but I don't know. And I'm way into martial arts, so I just love Volume One a lot for that reason.
Yeah, much more of that.
It blew my brains out.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
I think I'll always feel a certain way towards it because it was such an iconic. Movie viewing moment in my life.
Mm, right.
You know,
right,
I always remember seeing it. I always remember how I felt about it.
Mm-hmm.
That in and of itself, it's hard for me, you know, to think of volume one on the exact same level as I think of volume two, just because it had this whole other experience tied in with it.
Right.
Volume one did make Taylor's brain cells high five each other.
That's true.
Yes, it did.
Especially at the anime part.
Yeah.
High five! Anime is really cool.
But good movie. These are two of my favorite films of all time.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I'll be watching them to the end of time.
Yep.
I'll be letting my children watch them when they're too young to watch Fighting in Blood, because that's how I was raised and I'm all for it. So.
Great.
My kids are going to watch RoboCop when they're 10.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, that was an experience for me.
My children will watch
Sound of Music.
The Muppets.
The Omega Man.
I'm not having children.
There you go.
I don't want little children.
They won't watch
the
TV or movies at all. That's it. I will shelter them completely from the world.
Taylor's just going to find some little kids and expose them to crap they shouldn't see. Just for fun.
Hey.
Just out of spite.
That's right, because you like making people cry.
Your parents won't let you do this. Come over.
Hey, kid.
we'll smoke some crack while we watch it.
And then you're going to make the kids cry.
And then we're going to play with sharp objects and run around.
Have I ever shown you my collection of throwing stars?
Throwing stars.
Oh, man.
Oh, it was funny. It was a really funny outtake.
Yeah.
Nice little clip at the very end.
Just
one. Just one.
Yeah.
No, I think that was the
actually, this is the Canadian Blu-ray.
No, I think it's the regular. It's just it came from Canada. But
Canadia package.
Canadia's
rating.
It's probably a little different.
I doubt it very highly.
Probably is.
No. Us Canadians are sophisticated.
Are you?
We're sophisticated, yes.
I don't know.
Yes, we are, and we're very polite.
Up there in Canada?
In Canada. We are very polite people.
Eh?
So.
I was trying to work an A in there somewhere.
You know that whole thing about making people cry? You're so mean.
This is where she gets a reputation.
Yep. We're going to witness it right now.
I can't believe you did that. All right, okay.
He's starting to tear up.
Yeah, the tears are gonna
flow. And I'm already laughing.
Poor Sarah.
Tears are gonna flow. Yeah.
Well.
All right. Yeah, you're coming back.
These were
in my final performance.
I extremely enjoyed this, watching Volume One and Volume Two in a row, as we mentioned on the Volume One recording. That's what we were doing.
But you listened to them 1 week apart.
I didn't remember.
Yeah, we did towards the end.
All right.
Yeah, actually, it's really cool seeing them back to back.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever done this.
I've never done it like this. I mean,
it's pretty cool.
I've at least had like few hours or so in between the two. Mm-hmm. I've never just done like
I've had like years or months. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it was nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
So. Neato.
Cool. Well.
I recommend it.
Yes, definitely. Watch them back to back. Actually, that is a high recommendation.
Yeah.
You should watch them
back to back.
Tough going, and if you take a little break, take just a little break, and then go right
whatever.
To volume two.
For all you people who've watched like all the uncut Lord of the Rings,
yeah,
I think you can.
I think you can handle this.
I think you can handle.
I did, and I can, and I did.
Yeah,
you did.
See, I haven't. I don't know if I want to, but I guess maybe I should. So, and on that note, we're going to wrap up this this particular film, Grok. This has been
Taylor Thomas
and
Duncan K. Fraser
and
Heidi Hilliker
and me, Serge Delpierre. See you next week.